Look, the Bellas are going into the Hall of Fame. But the question is not if the Bella twins go into the Hall of Fame. The question is when. For those of you thinking that there's no way that would happen anytime soon, I wouldn't say that. I don't see them going in this year, but could the Bella twins go in, let's say, 2020 or 2021? Yeah. Yeah, they could.
It's business time, baby.
The Solar Monster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered the street.
We like fighting a woman.
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
Fight me.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
That was from SoundOff 582 over a year ago, answering a mailbag question about the Bella Twins possibly going into the WWE Hall of Fame, with my prediction of when they would likely be going in. And if the news this week is to be believed, then I was right on the money. I'll talk about the Hall of Fame news a little bit later. This is episode 639 of the Solar Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, February 16th, 2020. I am the Solar Monster. I've got news on the Hall of Fame. I've got news on The Undertaker's opponent for WrestleMania, and some late news here on John Cena's WrestleMania opponent that, if true, is, in a word, underwhelming. But it's also TakeOver Sunday. I've got NXT TakeOver Portland predictions for tonight's show. And speaking of TakeOver, there will be no NXT live stream tonight. There will be a TakeOver review. It'll be pushed out to YouTube a few hours after the show goes off the air. I'm just not able to go live tonight, so no live stream, but there will be a TakeOver review, so you will want to watch for that overnight. It should be up. The Sound Off is sponsored by Audible. When you sign up for your free Audible trial at audibletrial.com/solomonster and grab your one free audiobook, you help out this very podcast. You can download titles and listen to them offline, anytime, anywhere. The app is free to download. You can listen across devices without losing your spot. So if you're listening to Glenn Jacobs narrating his new Mayor Kane book, for example, you can pick up right where you left off with him talking about setting Jim Ross on fire. They've got thousands of different titles, wrestling and non-wrestling, to choose from. So sign up now, free for 30 days, audibletrial.com/solomonster. And get your one free audio book. Become a PayPal VIP. Go to thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. I want to say thank you to the Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton, who I believe is going to the TakeOver show tonight. And maybe bringing a sound-off sign with him. So be watching for that. John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, The Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Killshot Keith Hart, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, The Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Stephen Handyman Halistick, Josh the Shooter Stockton, Jared Dark Knight Mysterio, The Featherweight Matt Fate, Steve the Sully Monster O'Sullivan, New York Punk Arnold Modesto.
New York Punk Arnold Modesto.
What's up, Arnold? Fellow New Yorker. John Raging Mad Riffle, Body Snatcher, Eddie Hirobi. I was just talking to Eddie on Facebook last night. Main event, Marion Farrell, who would like to wish his best friend Daryl McDonald a very happy birthday. Daryl survived 30 and just turned 31 yesterday. Two of the best WrestleManias we've gotten in the past decade, 30 and 31. So happy birthday, Daryl. 31 is not a bad place to be. Also, shout out to Kyle Webster from Fort Knox, Alex the Don, Houchins, and Hex316. Thank you for the love on iTunes. John Krauser. Got to give John Krauser a shout out here. He has a comedy show gig coming to Los Angeles this coming Saturday. We were able to help John sell out his last show in Chicago. So if you are in the LA area, I'm hoping you can buy a ticket to come out and support him again now. For his Impractical Magic Show at the Second City Studio Theater, 6560 Hollywood Boulevard, coming up on Saturday, February 22nd at 10 p.m. It's an hour-long sketch show that explores the world of magicians, witches, and wizards outside of the realm of a traditional magic show. And tickets are just $10 for general admission. You can call their Hollywood box office right now, 323-464-8255. 8542 or visit secondcity.com and just choose their Hollywood location and you can navigate to their schedule to order your tickets. There were more than 9,000 pending requests to join our private group on Facebook. I've often spoken of this over the years. That's my fault for allowing it to get out of control like that. I have wiped the slate clean. I have wiped out all of those requests. We're starting over again. And so now we start fresh. If you were pending for a very long time and stuck in queue, if you feel that you should have been in the group, if you would like to join the group, you may do so. You will be asked to answer a couple of questions first, and then I can approve you. So just search for Solid Monster Sounds Off, not the fan page, the private group on Facebook. And if for some reason you can't find it, if it's not coming up, you're probably blocked for some reason. Otherwise, it should pop right up, and hopefully we will see you in the group. A lot of very interesting discussions always going on in the Facebook group. NXT TakeOver Portland airs live tonight on the WWE Network at 7 Eastern. Kickoff begins at 6:30, and I will, as I mentioned, be recording my TakeOver review tonight, not going live unless something changes in the next few hours. I don't want to really get into why, hoping that this will all be taken care of. But in the meantime, that is the plan, is to record and post after the fact. This is the first Sunday TakeOver show, and on paper, it has the potential to be, I think, maybe the best they've ever done. A rare break from the five-match format. This one has six, unless they move one onto the pre-show, which they usually don't do with the TakeOver shows. Kathy Kelly took to social media on Friday to announce that she has decided to leave WWE, and her last day will be tonight's TakeOver. Evidently, she informed the company of her decision a few weeks ago. This was not a sudden thing. In her statement, she thanked WWE, and she said, "I have typed out and deleted this about 20 times over the past few days. I'm still unsure what to write. I have come to the decision to leave WWE, with Sunday's TakeOver being my last day. If you know me, you know this was more than a job. You know how much I loved it and how difficult this decision was. But sometimes in order to have room for growth, you have to step away. I'm not sure yet where my next chapter will take me, but I am damn excited for it. And I promise this is not goodbye. It is just a see you later." And she will be interviewing Triple H later tonight, as she always does, after TakeOver goes off the air. So that might be a little awkward. But it doesn't seem like there's any ill will. Of course, I say that, and who knows that she won't pop up in AEW or something, but it doesn't seem like there's any kind of ill will or bad blood or anything like that. She just, for whatever her personal reasons are, decided that she had to leave. And I thought she was very good in the role. She's got an actual personality, which we're not always able to see with some of these WWE on-screen announcers and backstage interviewers. I think she was an asset in many ways to NXT and easily would have, you know, risen through the company the way Renee Young did had she stuck around. So I don't want to sit here and say it's a huge loss. They're never going to recover from it, but, you know, it's too bad. I like Kathy. I'm going to work in here some of my thoughts from the Go Home show where appropriate. I don't really have a whole lot to say about Wednesday's show. I thought the show was solid. Not the most exciting NXT show that I've ever seen. We've got Tegan Nox taking on her former best friend Dakota Kai in a street fight. Dakota turned on Tegan at War Games and knocked her out with a knee injury. Tegan came back and beat Dakota in their first match on NXT a few weeks ago. So I think Dakota needs the win here, and I think she gets it. And I think she gets the win to even things out and to stretch this feud to a third and final match, WrestleMania weekend. I don't know what that stipulation could be. But I don't think this is the end of this, and if it's not, then Dakota Kai's got to win. We've got the winners of the 2020 Dusty Classic, the Broserweights, Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne, challenging the Undisputed Era, Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. For the NXT Tag Team Championship, we had three different Broserweight vignettes on NXT this past week, the last one easily being the best of the bunch. And the story here is that Matt Riddle is treating the Dusty Cup like it's an actual human being. He refers to it, you know, the three of us, he says. Pete Dunne just looks at him with this incredulous look on his face, like, what have I gotten myself into here? And they were trying to figure out ways to transport the cup with them to Portland to get the takeover. And so first they start on this road trip to Portland. You've got the dusty cup sticking out of the roof of their convertible. And, you know, Pete Dunne is driving at one point and Riddle's telling him, look, you got to drive on the right side of the road. It's not the way it is here in London or wherever he's from. And so they get pulled over by the cops. Riddle says he'll do the talking. And later we cut to a shot of the car being towed, and so they need to come up with a plan B. Too much weed. I guarantee the cops smelled weed. So then there was a second vignette that aired later, and they're riding in a paddle boat in some kind of a marina or somewhere in Florida. It has a giant fake swan on the front of it. I don't know if this is a thing down there, or they just found some random paddle boat with a swan on it, but they're riding in it, and you know, trying to figure out what plan are they going to come up with. They're not going to take a boat to Portland, but what can they do? And then all of a sudden, the light bulb goes off, and Riddle says he's got an idea. That leads to the third and final vignette later, where it's late at night. They're on this giant, just empty runway. There's one airplane sitting on the runway. And they're wheeling the cup towards the plane, this private jet that is sitting on the runway. And Dunn says, that's for us. Like, how did you pull this off? And Riddle says, he knows a guy. You know, the plan is to load the trophy onto the plane, and that way that's how you get the cup to Portland. I thought the back and forth here was, this was very entertaining. I have enjoyed the interplay between these two more than I thought I would. And they end up on the plane with the trophy. Riddle sort of shoves Dunn into the underbelly of the plane, climbs inside with him. We find out it's Triple H's private jet, and off to Portland they go. Goofy shit, but I thought very entertaining. I think they need to win so we can get more of these odd couple videos between these two. I'm picking Riddle and Dunn to win the championship, but only hold the titles for a little bit, not too long. Maybe even drop them right back to Undisputed Era, because I don't know, they don't have a whole lot of established teams in NXT right now. I mean, you know, they just had the Dusty Classic, and so they brought in some NXT UK. If you bring in the NXT UK crew, they've got some really good teams down there. You know, Mustache Mountain, and, you know, we had Gargano and Ciampa together, but I think that was pretty much just a one-time thing at the Worlds Collide show. So there's any number of combinations they could put together, but I wouldn't expect them to be champions for very long. Because Pete Dunne needs to, in the end, as much as I enjoyed this, get fed up with Matt Riddle and destroy him so that we can get some kick-ass matches between Pete Dunne and Matt Riddle. Yeah, WrestleMania weekend in Tampa, that might be a little too soon to do a match between the two of them, but I do think that's where you got to get to in the end. Finn Balor goes one-on-one with Johnny Gargano, who got a win over Cameron Grimes on Wednesday night. In a very good match. One of the things I like about the TakeOver show this time around, there's a couple of big matches here that really could go either way. And it's this one and the main event. It's not overly obvious who the winner is going to be coming out of. It's not an easy prediction to make. It could go either way. You could have Johnny get his revenge on Balor and get a big win. Or you can have Balor go over, which is what I think is going to happen. I think Finn Balor gets the win over Johnny Gargano. And that may well be the end of their feud. I'm not saying that Balor wins and it continues on. I mean, I guess it could. This is the first match between these two. If they want to have a second and third match, then this is only one step in the process. But I think Balor wins. We have Keith Lee defending the North American title against Dominik Dijakovic. This could steal the show. I'm very much looking forward to this. These two have great chemistry together. They always have very good matches, very fun, just big man matches where they throw each other around and beat the piss out of each other. This will be no different, but Keith Lee just won the championship. He can't drop it yet. So Keith Lee retains. Rhea Ripley defends her NXT Women's Championship against Bianca Belair. Charlotte Flair is expected to be at the show. I don't know if she's said that yet, but that's certainly the rumor going around, is that she will be at TakeOver. Is she going to physically get involved in this match? Maybe if not physically, I could see a distraction. I don't see her costing Rhea the championship. I think the match is set for WrestleMania. I think it's going to be Rhea and Charlotte. It should not be anything else. It should not be a triple threat. It should not be anything other than Rhea versus Charlotte. And could they take the championship off of Rhea and have Rhea and Charlotte? No, because Charlotte won the Royal Rumble, so she's got to get a championship match. So the only outcome here, and she just won it a couple months ago, is Rhea retaining. Rhea retaining over Bianca. And then the main event. We have Adam Cole defending his NXT championship against the former champion, Tommaso Ciampa, looking to reclaim Goldie, reclaim the title he never lost. I'm picking Adam Cole to retain the title here. And I think one scenario that I'm leaning towards that I can see playing out. Finn Balor is going to beat Johnny Gargano, let's say, earlier in the night. I can see Balor coming back out because you might say, well, where does Balor go from here? Balor comes back out during this match and, you know, it leads to a situation where he costs Tommaso Ciampa the title. You know, he costs him the match. And it leads to Balor against Ciampa, possibly in Tampa, at the next TakeOver show. You know, or they could do a three-way and have Balor, Cole, and Ciampa WrestleMania weekend. But I think once, you know, if Balor's going to move on from Gargano, and maybe he's not, you know, maybe they're still going to feud. But if he wins here, I think he comes back out. He could be the one who costs Ciampa the title. And then you can, again, do a singles match. You could do a triple threat match. They could do a fatal four-way and throw Gargano in there. I'm not a huge fan of these multi-man matches, but, you know, you put Ciampa, Gargano, Cole, and Balor in the ring together, you're not going to get anything less than an excellent match. But I think Adam Cole retains here. It seems a little too soon. I think if you're going to take it from him, you take it on WrestleMania weekend. So the question is, where does that leave the Velveteen Dream? You know, Velveteen Dream is walking around with Roderick Strong's wife and kid, airbrushed on his tights. They have a match scheduled for NXT this Wednesday. If Dream can dispatch Roddy in their match and be done with him and be done with Undisputed Era. And again, maybe he can work into that world title picture at the next TakeOver show after Portland. You know, maybe it's Cole defending against Velveteen Dream. Maybe he's going to be factored in there in some way, right? That's a possibility too. But we learned this week that John Cena will return to SmackDown in 2 weeks post Sweet Saudi Money for the February 28th episode of SmackDown in Boston. He's coming back just in time for WrestleMania season. And while I am still holding out hope, dim as it may seem, for my prediction earlier this year of a John Cena Velveteen Dream match at WrestleMania. Whatever his role is for Cena, it's said to be something that he himself wants to do. The Dream match, Velveteen Dream match, would be great. I mean, he's the man that Cena himself once said could be the one in WWE. Those were his exact words. This was a couple of years ago at a Comic-Con or something. He said, you know, somebody asked him the question. Here's three names, including Adam Cole. I forget who the other name was. From NXT and Velveteen Dream. And actually, I don't even remember if Dream was one of the options. Maybe Cena just threw his name out there. But maybe it was. Let's say it was. Cena picked Dream. He says, look, you know, some people might be surprised by this or upset by this. But this is the guy who I think is the future. He could be the man in WWE. And he'd love to work with him one day. So the idea of doing the match. Dream just came back from his injury and, you know, he's very popular and, you know, but he's popular in front of that audience. Can Velveteen Dream translate that popularity to the mainstream WWE audience? He's a charismatic guy. I think he can. I think he's got all the tools to make it happen. There's no reason to think that just because he's over at Full Sail, he wouldn't get over in that character on Raw or SmackDown. I have every expectation that he will, as long as Vince McMahon knows what he's doing, and that's what worries me. But if Cena were to put the stamp of approval on this guy and put him over in the biggest match of his career in front of this gigantic crowd, WrestleMania, it don't get no bigger than that. I'd rather see that match. Unfortunately, it does not sound like that is the plan. Nor is Cena wrestling The Fiend and going for title number 17, which would be a terrible idea right now anyway, because his schedule wouldn't allow him to defend the championship, so what's the point? So you may ask, if not Dream, and if not The Fiend, then who? Because John Cena's going to have a match. He's going to do something. He's not coming back to TV just to say hello and then leave. So what is he going to do? You know, Goldberg is either one and done after the Saudi Arabia show, or if by chance, I'm not trying to will this into existence, but if by chance he beats The Fiend and wins the Universal title, again, Cena's not challenging for the championship, I don't think. Daniel Bryan doesn't seem to have any obvious opponent this year. They've only wrestled once before, and Bryan already beat him. It's none of the above. According to Dave Meltzer, and Andrew Zarian of the Matt Men podcast says that he confirmed this with his own source as well, John Cena, as of today, is currently scheduled to wrestle Elias at WrestleMania. Yes, the same Elias who was manhandled and dumped from the Royal Rumble match by Brock Lesnar in the first 60 seconds of the match. I mean, I guess Cena was once manhandled by Brock too, but not in 60 seconds. I guess they want to bring this story to a conclusion. This would be the third straight WrestleMania that John Cena has had some kind of interaction or involvement with Elias. Think back to WrestleMania 34. He wrestled The Undertaker in a quick squash. Before that, though, Cena laid out Elias with an attitude adjustment. When he walked out and he was talking crap about John Cena, Cena laid him out. Last year at WrestleMania, Cena interrupted an Elias concert as Thugonomics Cena, the doctor of Thugonomics. He came out, he rapped insults on him before laying him out with an FU. This would be the third straight year of Cena and Elias. It's like the new Kane and Pete Rose. Only this time they would actually have a match. I have never seen Elias as anything more than a mid-card act. Now, he's a babyface now, and he's over. People like him. He comes out. He sings his song. The people clap along to the song, and they cheer for him. So he's definitely, you know, popular in his own way. The question is Elias popular to be a headline act in WWE, something he has never been before? And I just don't see it. I've never seen it. I still don't see it. So, you know, he's a babyface now. He gets some nice reactions. Once the bell rings, I lose all interest I have in this guy. And I respect the fact that John Cena may want to elevate him. I guess that's the idea. Cena wants to work with somebody he can elevate. But, you know, I don't think he can be elevated much higher than the level he's at right now. I really don't. I just don't see him being enough of a star, even if he was to get a win over John Cena, to warrant this kind of sustained involvement with John Cena. I don't see it. You know, they used Jericho once to try to elevate Fandango at WrestleMania years ago. That was Fandango's first match. That was a little bit different than this situation, but that was a fail. And so if the idea is to elevate Elias, even if he wins, do you ask yourself this question? And maybe I'm in the minority on this. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not seeing something that all of you are seeing. Do you honestly see Elias headlining shows? Do you see Elias challenging for the Universal Championship and being a believable challenger in that role? I think it is a waste of John Cena's involvement if they go down this road. If he's going to elevate somebody, then elevate somebody who can actually go on to bigger and better things. Now, if the idea is that Cena can't do a long match because either he's too beat up or because, you know, he's filming a lot of movies. He's got a lot of big movies coming out. You know, he's not getting the kind of movies that Rock is doing, like five movies a day, this guy. He's got the ridiculous schedule. But he's well on his way. Cena's becoming more and more busy. He's doing more and more, you know, film roles. And so maybe he just can't do a long match. Maybe he can't do an extended match. They want a low-risk match for him. If that's the case, then you know what they should do? I'm not even joking when I say this. Again, this would not be my number one choice. You know, in a perfect world, Cena would have a major opponent to go up against at WrestleMania. Or you would put him in there with a young up-and-comer like a Velveteen Dream and let him go out there and wrestle for 15 minutes. And let him put Dream over. But if he can't do that, then what I think would be a great idea, if Cena's not allowed to do too much, I'd rather they have him beat whoever the 24/7 champion is. I know it's a joke belt. Have him beat whoever the 24/7, who is it right now? Riddick Moss? Okay, well, how many weeks between now and WrestleMania? I'm sure Riddick Moss is, he may have already lost the championship for all I know. He may have been attacked at his hotel, and I haven't heard about it. I'm sure Riddick Moss will not be the 24/7 champion by the time April rolls around for WrestleMania. So whether it's him or somebody else, have Cena beat whoever the 24/7 champion is to win that stupid title. You know, maybe, and it's not something you would announce in advance. You know, Cena shows up on SmackDown, and maybe he starts teasing what his role at WrestleMania is going to be. And similar to what they did a couple of years ago, as we go into WrestleMania, it's still not made clear. Cena's going to be there. He's promised. He's guaranteed that he's going to be there. But we don't know what he's going to do. We don't know who he's going to wrestle. And it's not until Cena gets to the show and gets in the ring and shows up that whoever the 24/7 champion is, you know, comes out to confront him or stumbles out there, whatever the case may be, gets in Cena's face. Cena lays him out, wins the 24/7 title. Big pop. Cena's got this title now. He's the champion. And then you have R-Truth come to the ring to confront his childhood hero, his childhood idol, the great John Cena. He's been telling us for how many months now? Years, it feels like. What an inspiration that John Cena is to him. How much he looked up to John Cena when he was a kid. And so Cena gives him a short match. And Truth, in the end, wins. He pins John Cena. And R-Truth, he shocks the world, and he beats Cena to win back the 24/7 title. And Cena's got a big smile on his face, a big grin. He gives R-Truth his props. He shakes his hand, raises his hand into the air. The people go nuts. The people love Truth. And I think it would be, and you know, it would be this big endorsement of him after the match. And Truth gets this WrestleMania moment that I don't think he's ever gotten in all the years he's been in this company. When has he ever had like a real big moment or big match at WrestleMania? Never. None that I could think of. He's done some skits probably and stuff like that, but that's it. If Cena can't do anything that serious, and I look at a guy like him, as big of a star as he is, and I always think, you know, he should be doing something big. If you've only got him for one match, make the most of it. Put him in there against the marquee name. Put him in there and do something of value. I don't see a match or even a win for Elias as being anything that's really terribly valuable, to be honest with you. I just don't see it. He beats Cena. Okay, great. I don't see him going anywhere beyond that. So what's the point? You may as well just use it as a feel-good, fun, happy moment, playing off this whole R-Truth thing that he's been talking about now for months on end about him and Cena. Where is it leading to? Why not a WrestleMania moment between the two of them? So if he can't do anything too serious, I'd much rather see them do that than just the match with Elias. I think that would be a nice moment. And I have to say this, for someone who WWE is building as the greatest of all time, they want you so badly to believe that John Cena is the greatest of all time, and maybe some of you think he is. You know, he gave his body to the company. I'm sure his body is beaten to all hell. He was on top in that company longer than probably any other headliner in the history of the company. Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, The Rock. Austin's run on top was actually relatively brief. Rock wasn't much longer. Hogan was on top for a long time, came back and was on top again for a little bit. But this sustained push as a top-level headline guy, the face of the company. I mean, maybe Bruno. I mean, you want to go back to the days of Bruno. Bruno was world champion for 8.5 years the first time, and then he had a second run. So maybe you could, if I went back and added up in totality all of the years, maybe Bruno. But you're looking at Cena really from 2005. And what's the cutoff? I mean, do you go the full decade? Because, you know, by that point, he was still full-time, but like not really. I'd consider that full-time. He was doing the U.S. Title Open Challenge in 2015. It really wasn't until he got hurt, and that would have been probably late 2015, 2016. Then I wouldn't really say Cena was full-time anymore. But, you know, he and Bruno are right there in the conversation. I can't think of very many others. So he's had that sustained run on top. He had a measurable effect on business, or did anyway, when it came to house shows and you know, all the merch that he sold and all the different t-shirts and just everything that this guy does. So is there an argument to be made that he will go down as the greatest in company history? You can make the argument. He's not, to me, he's not, but you can probably make the argument. But boy, do they want you to believe that he is. Every time he comes back, and you're going to see it again in 2 weeks on SmackDown, I guarantee it. You listen to the announcers. Listen to the language that they use. They bill him as the greatest of all time. And even though Cena himself has recently said he thinks Brock Lesnar is the greatest of all time, but that's just Cena saying stuff, I think. For a guy who is supposedly the greatest of all time, his booking, these past few WrestleMania shows, these past few years, when he is around, whether these are his own ideas or these are all Vince McMahon's ideas, has been mind-boggling. For somebody as big of a star as he is, the way that he has been used, the things that he has done these last several WrestleManias, these last few years, has been just mind-boggling to me. WrestleMania is going Hollywood next year for the first time since 2005. It was made official this week that WrestleMania 37 will take place at SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, California, just outside of Los Angeles, Sunday, March 28th, 2021, the first late March WrestleMania in 5 years since the last California show, WrestleMania 31. I assume this is to avoid Easter Sunday, which falls on the first Sunday in April next year, although now WrestleMania will fall on the second night of Passover. So no Goldberg, I assume. The Super Bowl will be at SoFi Stadium the following year in 2022, so I'm sure they're going to announce this gigantic attendance number, maybe their biggest number ever for WrestleMania next year. When I hear WrestleMania goes Hollywood, like a lot of you, I think of the movie trailer parodies and the vignettes they did heading into WrestleMania 21, which is some of the best promotion I think they've ever done for a WrestleMania show. I love those skits. I love those parodies. Obviously, they all stand out to me. Even the When Harry Met Sally one with Christy Hemme and Kurt Angle, I mean, that was entertaining enough. Maybe my least favorite of the bunch. But I think they did a Pulp Fiction one with Eddie Guerrero, and they had the Dirty Harry Undertaker one. The best one may have been the Basic Instinct one with Stacey Keibler. And it's a shame because they're never going to show this to us ever again. But it had Jericho, Benoit, and Christian. There might have been was there a fourth person? It was Jericho, Christian, Benoit. I don't remember if there was a fourth guy in there, but, you know, Stacy was in the hot seat playing the role oh my goodness, her name just popped out of my head. I was going to say Kim Basinger, but Sharon Stone, not Kim Basinger. That's Batman. Sharon Stone. I love that skit. I love that. I was actually on YouTube. I don't even know how I stumbled across it a few months ago before this announcement was even made. And I was watching it and I realized how funny it was. That might be my favorite of all the ones that they did. The Undertaker Dirty Harry one was pretty good. There were a couple of others. I'm not remembering them offhand right now, but those were awesome. And so I hope we get a kind of a new age version now with the current talent roster, a new spin on that. That would be cool. Hey, if they're going to do it, I pitch an idea right now. I know I've been big on R-Truth all of a sudden this whole show, but you got to do something with Brock Lesnar and R-Truth. I know Brock Lesnar does not usually do segments like this, but you got to make an exception. You got to make an exception. You got to do something with Truth and Brock, like a takeoff of like a buddy cop movie or something with the two of them. You got to do it. Got to do it. Oh my goodness. So Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns was talking to ESPN. And pushing the idea of a match with The Rock next year. The Rock is going to be 48 years old next year. He's still gigantic, obviously. He still keeps himself in great shape. But he's going to be 48 years old. He's not getting any younger. And I guess that doesn't really matter all that much when you've got 51-year-old PCO as the Ring of Honor champion. You've got the Rock and Roll Express on television every week still wrestling. But The Rock has not had a match since his six-second win over Eric Rowan at WrestleMania 32. Hasn't had a real match since he dropped the WWE title to John Cena at WrestleMania 29. And in that match, he tore a couple of different muscles. He suffered three hernias. From that one match, he had surgery, three different hernias he had. And that ended up delaying the filming of that Hercules movie that he was getting ready to shoot. He tore his hamstring in the middle of the first match he had in Miami against John Cena, once in a lifetime, until it wasn't. And that was years ago. Those matches, at this point, we're talking 2012, 2013, it's a new decade now. He's a lot older now than he was even then. The point is, The Rock is the biggest movie star in the world right now, gets paid like the biggest movie star in the world. He's constantly working and making movies. No studio in their right mind would let this man wrestle a match. They would be insane to do that. Plus, people forget, The Rock already quietly retired last year. Now, we know how these wrestling retirements go. And it sucks that his last match was against Eric Rowan. It just doesn't compute to me that is going to go down as of this moment as the final match of The Rock's career. It was a 6-second match against Eric Rowan. I wish they would have gotten the match done in 2016 that they had planned with Rock and Triple H, one of his greatest rivals. I think that would have been a far more appropriate way for him to end his career. It didn't happen. Due to his schedule, it didn't happen. I don't see the appeal, personally, in doing Rock against Roman the way that others do, not unless The Rock comes back and is Hollywood Rock. Look, they're going to be WrestleMania goes Hollywood. If ever there was a time to resurrect Hollywood Rock, I know it's a long shot, but they could do it next year. If they will do Hollywood Rock, then I am all on board for Rock against Roman Reigns. That is the only situation you can get me on board to really care about Rock and Roman having a match. Roman said that it's a dream match for a lot of people. I'm not one of those people. Now, The Miz also posted on Instagram, and The Miz said, if I don't main event WrestleMania next year, I quit. Well, it was nice knowing you, Mike. You had a good career. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. It's nice to have goals, I guess. Maybe it's a storyline they're going to bring to TV. Or maybe it's just some throwaway line he put on social media. He's a heel right now. Obviously, he's not going anywhere. But some black magic would have to happen between now and then to convince me that The Miz should be back anywhere near the WrestleMania main event. WrestleVotes on Twitter was first to report 3 additional names not yet confirmed by WWE, although they should be any week now, for this year's Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Dave Meltzer said in this week's Observer that the report, which originated on WrestleVotes, is accurate. Now, we already know that Batista and the NWO, Hogan, Hall, Nash, and Sean Waltman are going into the Hall of Fame. They're the headliners. Batista and the NWO are your headliners in Tampa this year at the Hall of Fame. Joining them, if this report is accurate, will be Jushin Thunder Liger, who retired just last month. I had him pegged as the international inductee last year, so I was only a year off. And Nikki and Brie, the Bella Twins, the pregnant Bella Twins. They are both with child and expecting at the moment. No one is going to doubt Liger's credentials when it comes to being acknowledged in any wrestling Hall of Fame, even though he only wrestled once in a WWE ring, and that was against Tyler Breeze at the first NXT TakeOver show in Brooklyn. He technically wrestled twice for WWE at the Tokyo Dome in 1990. There was a joint show, a rare joint show that WWE, where they partnered with other promotions. There was a joint show in 1990, for those who don't know, at the Tokyo Dome, called the Wrestling Summit, where WWE collaborated with All Japan and New Japan. Actually, it was probably more surprising to see All Japan and New Japan working together than WWE being there. But there's this great photo online. If you do a Google image search, it's probably one of the first things that comes up. If you type in the right keywords, there's this great photo online of Liger making his entrance. And Vince McMahon is just like in the dugout or whatever, standing behind him with his glasses on, pointing to the ring, almost like he's sending Liger out to destroy someone. There's a Bret Hart match on that show against Tiger Mask being Mitsuhara Misawa. A Bret Hart-Misawa match. You would think that this is a dream match. And that match is a total letdown. That match is not good. Not good. Now, had they done that match 5 years later, it probably would still be talked about today. It would probably be this legendary match. You know, Misawa would go on to become one of the biggest stars of all time. Bret Hart would go on to become a much bigger star and a much, you know, a much better wrestler over time. So that match probably came 5 years or so too early. But I got to see Liger in action live twice in my life. Once was that TakeOver show in Brooklyn. The other, I believe, was at a Ring of Honor show at the Hammerstein Ballroom. I don't remember what year or what show it was, but I'm almost positive I was at a Hammerstein show and saw him wrestling. You know, last year I got to Madison Square Garden late for their G1 supercard, and I missed the pre-show Battle Royal that had Liger in it. I got there late from the House of Glory show, so I didn't get to see him there, but the guy's a living legend. There should be no debate about this. And there was some in the Facebook group. I think from people who didn't realize that he actually did wrestle that one match at the TakeOver show. So technically he has a match in a WWE ring that they can acknowledge and they can put in his video package. If that meets your threshold for what qualifies as a Hall of Fame candidate, I'm almost positive they put people in, and I'm talking wrestlers, not celebrities, before promoters, Vern Gagne. I'm almost positive there are more than one person in the Hall of Fame, more than one wrestler, promoter who never worked in WWE, never had a match in WWE. But even if they didn't, you know, here's the thing that people need to understand. You have other wrestling Hall of Fames. And some of those Hall of Fames are even more respected and well-regarded than, you know, the WWE one, because the WWE one is just, there's no physical Hall of Fame. There's no physical Hall of Fame. There's no formal process for how these decisions are made. So it's totally a WWE marketing ploy. Everybody knows that. But WWE is the big game in town. They're buying up tape libraries. They put all their competition out of business. They are still the big dominant player in the wrestling industry. And they have the most visibility and the most reach. So to a lot of people, it's a big deal to be acknowledged. You know, and it could get them a big payday after the fact. They can go around and go to different conventions and go on the indies and, hey, it's WWE Hall of Famer so-and-so, and maybe they can charge a higher fee. So to some of those people, it is a big deal. They have an obligation, I feel, as, you know, the last big kind of dominant player in town. We'll see in 5 years what AEW looks like or anybody else who may pop up. But I think they almost have an obligation to, you know, honor some of these people in a way. They don't have to. Obviously, they don't have to do anything they don't want to. But I think they do. I think they do have an obligation to acknowledge some of these people. It's a nice thing for them to do. And it makes the Hall of Fame, you know, it gives it a little more credibility in the eyes of some people that they're willing to step outside their own little bubble and acknowledge some of these really big legendary names that have made an impression on the wrestling industry. I mean, look, there's a lot of wrestlers who probably work for Vince McMahon right now in his own company who would say that one of their big inspirations in coming up in the business was Jushin Thunder Liger. So whether or not he has a whole resume of matches in WWE, it doesn't matter. He's probably influenced the whole generation of talent that work for him right now. So he deserves to be honored. He deserves to be acknowledged. He's a living legend, and I'm glad that they're, again, this is not confirmed yet, but it sounds like it is. I'm glad they're doing it. Hopefully this is true, and they do honor him this year. And then you have the Bellas. And as you might imagine, there is probably no more polarizing a pick. I mean, short of trying to put Chris Benoit in the Hall of Fame, you will not find anyone or any act more polarizing than the Bella Twins. Very polarizing choice for the Hall of Fame. You knew they would be going in. It was only a matter of when, not if. And if you listen to that clip that I played at the start of today's podcast from episode 582 of The Sound Off last year, I predicted they're either going in 2020 or 2021. Not 5 years down the road. Not 10 years down the road. Because they need names. They can't afford to wait that long. The Bellas still have name value now. They may not have that name value in 5 years or 10 years from now when they've been off TV and they've been out of the ring and they have a couple of kids and all those Total Divas and Total Bellas fans, maybe they're not around anymore. So it seemed pretty obvious to me that they were going in sooner rather than later. This should not come as a surprise to anybody. Now, are they going in for their great in-ring prowess? No. Brie in particular, was never a good in-ring performer. Nikki improved a lot over time, but Brie was tough to watch. They're going in because they were stars. They were stars for the company at a time when people grew tired of the women having 30-second matches on television every week, and they were in a lot of those horrible 30-second and 60-second matches on TV. The company is no doubt going to credit them as paving the way for the women's revolution. Look, they played a role, for sure, because they were part of those short matches. And because of how popular they were, they certainly have their fans. The company recognized that. The company heard from a lot of those angry fans the night that the Give Divas a Chance hashtag was created. It came after a 30-second match on Raw with the Bellas taking on Paige and Emma. That included a lot of angry members of the Bella Army voicing their displeasure on social media. I did go back and watch that match again. It's up on their YouTube channel. What a slap in the face to all four of those women. It's actually jarring now. All these years later, it's jarring to go back and watch a lot of those Divas matches. Because, you know, we kind of joke about it, and there were a lot of women on that roster that just had no business being in the ring. You know, they looked hot, they picked them out of a catalog. There was a period where that is how they handpicked these women to be on TV. And so, they had never done this before, maybe they weren't even a wrestling fan before. They get thrust into this, not knowing what the hell they're doing, get a little bit of training, some of them got hurt, they got injured. Didn't know what they were doing. I can't even put the blame on them. I put the blame squarely on the company for that. But for the longest time, we just kind of expected that. The Divas matches, nobody really cared about that. They go out there, 20 seconds later, they're already back in the dressing room. That's just how it was. To go back and watch that now, with all the emphasis in the last 5 years that they've put on these women, and as good as a lot of the women are now on the roster, you just had the women in the WrestleMania main event last year. It's jarring to go back and watch some of these just nothing TV matches where they just gave them not even the respect of giving them 30 seconds of time before they were told, hey, you got to go home. It would literally, their music would end possibly before their music was even over for their entrance. The referee was telling them time to go home. They've said this before. They would get cues fed to them from the referee before the bell even rang to start the match. You got to go home. You got to hit your finish and go home. That's just how they treated the women in the women's matches back then. But what a slap in the face to those four women that night. On a 3-hour show, Paige and Emma, who were having 10 to 15 minute matches in NXT, are relegated to losing to the Bella Twins in 30 seconds. Nikki Bella was the champion. She was the Divas champion at the time. It was embarrassing to go back and watch that. So I think it's unfair to say the Bellas played no role whatsoever in that whole movement, because it wasn't a movement based on work rate. It was not a movement based on who's the best wrestler. That's not what that was about. It was about giving the women time for more than just an entrance on TV. Now, my hope is that WWE will not overstate their role in this, because that would be a slap in the face to all of the people who I think really were the driving force behind that whole movement in the first place. I think, when I think of the women's revolution, I hate even calling it that because it's some stupid buzzword bullshit they came up with, but when I think of the women's revolution in WWE, I think of people like Sarah Del Rey, or Sarah Amato. I still think of her as Sarah Del Rey. All the work that she's put in with the ladies down at the Performance Center, still does to this day, I think of her. I think of Paige and Emma in NXT, and the match that really kicked things off, the match they had at that first TakeOver show when the network launched in 2014, as being one of the sparks that lit the match. I think of AJ Lee being featured in main event segments on TV and dropping bombs on the Total Divas women and going after Stephanie McMahon on Twitter for being a hypocrite when nobody else had the guts to do that. I think of Charlotte and Sasha and Becky and Bayley and the run they had in NXT. The matches that they had down there, Charlotte, that first match she had when she won the championship against Natalya. I think of the match that really does not get talked about very often. It was a TakeOver match between Becky and Sasha. Obviously, I think of the matches with Sasha and Bayley, all of those things. And then all of them coming up at the same time to the main roster, change the whole face of that division. I mean, not instantly. They did those stupid factions at first. Remember, they had Team PCP or whatever the hell it was, PCB, whatever it was. But they really did change the entire face of that women's division. Those are the names I think of first. Not the Bella Twins, but the Bellas, they played their own role. The best way to put it, I think, the Bella Twins, they're stars, but they're not legends. That word gets thrown around way too easily these days. They're not legends, but they are stars, and they're stars. Look, that's what WWE's gonna need when they try to come up with more names for the Hall of Fame inductions in the future. Now, as far as who inducts them, I said over a year ago on this show, the two names that would make the most sense to me are either Daniel Bryan or Ronda Rousey. And I'm leaning towards Rousey now because I don't know that they would want a man doing the induction. It's all about girl power and all this shit. So I can see them not wanting Bryan to be the one to do the induction. I think Ronda Rousey would be an easy choice if she's willing to do it. I can't imagine she wouldn't be if they asked her. You know, they're not asking her to wrestle a match. Because, you know, she's talked about it when she came in. How the Bellas were very helpful to her and... she's obviously friendly with them and thinks the world of them. And just by having her there, they're going to get the publicity that they crave. That's all it's ever about with this company is publicity. How do we get publicity out of this? You're not going to get publicity out of Daniel Bryan inducting them. I don't even think you're going to get publicity out of Natty inducting them. You would get some out of Ronda coming back and doing the induction. And if they want Ronda back, if only for one night, then there you go. That's how you do it. You have Ronda Rousey induct the Bella Twins into the Hall of Fame. Raw Monday night was live from Ontario, California. We had over 2,500 votes in the Twitter poll. 49% thumbs up, 51% thumbs down. The streak of positive scores for Raw ends at 2, although barely. We almost had a 50-50 split. I wasn't really feeling the show either. I mean, it wasn't terrible. I wasn't feeling it the way that I did the 2 weeks before. I thought this was the weakest of the last three shows they've done. Naturally, as soon as I made mention last week of Brock Lesnar's perfect attendance record this year so far on Monday Night Raw, I should have known exactly what would happen next. The very next night, Brock Lesnar did not appear on Monday Night Raw, making that the second streak that Lesnar has broken. Not that he really had much of a reason to even be on the show, and you don't want him there unless you have a real reason, so I didn't mind it. I just thought it was funny that after I made that comment of this little streak that he had going on so far in 2020, he then no-shows Raw the very next night. There was a segment to open the show that I'm not going to bother getting much into, other than to say we heard from the Monday Night Messiah, who had a lot to say before Kevin Owens and the Viking Raiders showed up to shut the Monday Night Messiah up. But the Monday Night Messiah just kept on talking. Thankfully, in the chaos that ensued, Samoa Joe returned. Good to see him back and healthy. He came up from behind the Monday Night Messiah, locked him in the Coquina Clutch, and that would lead to our main event. Later in the show with the Monday Night Messiah, I'm Not Your Buddy Murphy and AOP against Kevin Owens, Samoa Joe, and the Vikings. We were not done with the Monday Night Messiah. There was more Monday Night Messiah yet to come. So the Monday Night Messiah's better half then walked out to defend her Raw Women's title against Asuka in a rematch from the Royal Rumble. This match was almost as good as the one in Houston. These two work well together. They went almost 20 minutes before Becky hit Asuka with a rock bottom for the win. I don't know if that's one of her new finishers now or not, but if she starts dropping the man's elbow, then they've gone too far. So after the match, as Becky was celebrating, Shayna Baszler attacks Becky Lynch from behind and puts her in the Kira Fuda clutch. That would have been enough of a statement for her to make, but instead, this is WWE. We've got to up the ante a little bit. We've got to get people talking. We've got to do something outrageous. So she throws Becky's lifeless body to the ground. And Shayna drops to her knees. And she bites Becky on the back of her neck. Like a vampire. Or a cannibal. And when she came up, there was a shitload of fake blood smeared all over her face and in her mouth from the blood capsule. Either that or she came in first in the annual cherry pie eating contest, one or the other. It was completely out of character for Shayna, since we have never, ever seen her do anything like this before in NXT. But the visual of her with the blood dripping from her mouth, I guess, was kind of cool, I guess. I thought this was stupid. I mean, I'm very happy. Look, it was like she got rabies or something and just lost her mind. Medics tended to Becky in the back. They tried to convince her to take an ambulance to the hospital. She refused before stealing the ambulance and then driving off. It took forever for her to start driving, too, which looked very silly. Maybe she couldn't find the car keys. I don't quite understand why she even felt the need to steal the ambulance. I mean, the fact that she stole it and wouldn't be arrested or anything, that's not even the issue. I saw people making a big deal about that. It's wrestling. How many times have we seen wrestlers commit Grand Theft Auto on this show over the years and carjack people and not be punished for it? I just don't get why she felt the need to steal it. If she was chasing after somebody, I can understand. We've seen guys jump in cars and steal cars to go chase after somebody. But goofy vampire bite aside, I can excuse the stupidity of that. I just thought it was dumb. It was completely out of character for her. It would be like me showing up on Raw and doing, something that you would never expect me to do. You know? Think about that. That would be the equivalent of somebody who has never done anything before. Like somebody who, let's say, is mild-mannered or something. They have like a mild-mannered, nice, white meat babyface type star who then goes on a different show, maybe they're drafted or whatever, and they debut and they gut and quarter people with a Swiss Army knife. It would be very out of character for them. It would also be illegal. But despite that, I'm willing to excuse the weirdness of this for the sheer fact that Shayna Baszler is now on Monday Night Raw where she belongs. She is now on television. And that is what matters the most. I think she is the perfect person to take that title off of Becky a year after Becky beat one of Shayna's best friends for it. There is a natural story there. One of the reasons why this whole, vampire bite thing I thought was so unnecessary and so dumb. There's a natural story there. And I hope they tell that story. I hope, despite what we saw on Monday, it doesn't just become a case of, hey, I want your title and, Becky's all upset about the bite, and they tell some of this story. Because you also got to remember something here, that at Survivor Series, Shayna Baszler beat Becky Lynch. She beat Bayley as well. It was a triple threat match. Which is why I also think you can get around the logic of, hey, this woman just shows up one day and she's probably going to get a championship match at WrestleMania. Like, if she doesn't have to beat somebody, if she doesn't have to qualify, if she doesn't have to win a battle royal or something, how does she get a title shot? How fair is that? That doesn't make any sense. Well, I can excuse that. You can get around that. Because she does have a win, technically, over Becky Lynch. That Becky Lynch has not avenged. Becky did not even take the losing fall. I mean, it was Bayley who tapped out, but she still beat Becky at Survivor Series. So she could argue, I beat you once, I could do it again. And this time I want your title. And that would be enough for me. That would be enough to satisfy me. But the women are not headlining WrestleMania this year. Last year, it felt like the main event. It felt like they deserved to be in that spot. It was the biggest match, or one of the biggest matches. This year, neither one of these women's championship matches feels main event worthy. That really should be Brock Lesnar and Drew McIntyre, if Drew is going to win the title. If Drew is going to be squashed in 5 minutes, then that probably is not a smart way to end the show. But it's been 4 years since the winner of the Men's Royal Rumble has actually competed in the closing match at WrestleMania. I think it's time. They resurrected the old VIP lounge with MVP for the first time in a decade. MVP is transitioning into a producer role behind the scenes so they could dust the segment off, I guess, whenever they need it. This week, they had Drew McIntyre as his guest. MVP wanted to be his advocate the way that Paul Heyman is Brock Lesnar's advocate on TV, but instead Drew Claymore kicked him in the face, knocked him over all the furniture and the sofa. This was fine. MVP's a good talker, so this kind of segment suits him well, and this was a way to get Drew to kick somebody's head off, which is an easy pop. I like the segment with Randy Orton and Matt Hardy in what was going to be Matt's swan song, but they're not done with him just yet. Plans have changed for Matt Hardy. He interrupted Randy and wanted to know why he did what he did to Edge. He brought up his own checkered history with Edge, which got some faint chance of Lita from the crowd. I can only imagine Rebbe Hardy's reaction at home watching this. But he said, you know, before all that happened, Edge and I, Adam and I, we were thick as thieves. You know, we traveled the roads together with Christian and Matt's brother Jeff. And he brought up the ladder match at No Mercy 99, which really led directly to the TLC matches that came later on. After Edge retired, he said they became friends again. And then Edge came back, only for Randy to take it away from him. What's wrong with you? He wanted to know. Orton tried for an RKO. He didn't get it at first, but then he finally nailed it. And then he gave Matt the same concerto that he gave to Edge, although Edge got carried out. Matt didn't get carried out. He got assisted out on his own 2 feet. He got to walk off. Edge did not. Although I guess Edge, you could argue Edge is the one that had the major spinal fusion surgery, and so that's why they had to carry him out. WWE has since announced a no-holds-barred match has been signed for Raw tomorrow night with Matt Hardy taking on Randy Orton. So I guess that concerto didn't really do a lot of damage because he's cleared to wrestle on Raw tomorrow night. Ryan Satin of Pro Wrestling Sheet says that Matt passed on WWE's latest contract offer. They have been trying very hard to keep him in the fold. They do not want him to leave. They do not want him to walk into AEW. So they've been making contract offers to him. Apparently, you know, very good money. But it's not about the money. You know, Matt's got, he's got money. He's saved his money. He's been smart with his money. It's not just about the money. So he passed on their latest contract offer last week. And since the concerto angle, I guess they felt it got a really great response, they decided, why not squeeze out another week's worth of the angle and do the match between them tomorrow night? We'll get some more television time out of it. We'll get Randy over as a sinister bastard. We got some time before Edge comes back. It's probably a few more weeks before we see him on TV. Matt's contract is said to be up in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today. March 1st is said to be when his contract expires. After which, he would be free to work wherever he wants without having to sit out the usual 90 days. And I said this on my Dynamite stream on Wednesday. I wonder if WWE really wanted to fuck with him. Or fuck with AEW, if they think he's going to go to AEW, and who knows, maybe they're going to use him in the Dark Order angle. So to fuck with them, could they just release him a week before his contract runs out? If they were to do that, if that means that he would then be subjected to that 90-day non-compete, because my understanding has always been that if they release you, if they cut you, if you request a release and they grant it, you got your release, but you got to sit out 90 days. If your contract just expires, think Dean Ambrose last year, then that's it. You're under no contractual obligations to the company. You can, I mean, the next day you can go walk into another wrestling company and be on TV if you want. Can you imagine if they, and I don't even know legally if they could do this, but if they just a few days before, hey, here's your termination papers. We're releasing you. What a dick move that would be. I would run out and buy a whole keg of popcorn and just sit in front of my computer waiting for Rebbe Hardy to pop up on Twitter. Matt had high praise for PCO on Twitter when somebody asked him about PCO. He's the reigning Ring of Honor world champion. PCO then chimed in and suggested that the two of them have a match. And Hardy said that proposition was positively delightful. But he's totally ending up in AEW if he leaves. I could see Matt maybe taking a detour briefly in like a Ring of Honor or an NWA or something. Maybe he travels around for a little bit, but there's no doubt in my mind this guy's all elite if he leaves this company. It's just a matter of time. Not much new on the Ruby Riott, Liv Morgan stuff outside of a video package they aired for Ruby, an interview where she called Liv a follower and said that she had to look after her before when they were together in the Riott Squad. You know, Ruby had surgery for 2 torn labrums, which doctors told her were torn for 10 years, ever since she started training to become a wrestler. So she never knew that she had these 2 torn labrums. She has never known what it is like to wrestle injury-free. until now. That is crazy. 10 years working on two torn labrums. The Monday Night Messiah, I'm Not Your Buddy Murphy and AOP. They beat Kevin Owens, Samoa Joe, and the Vikings in the main event. Joe had Murphy locked in the choke. He was tapping out. AOP, though, had the referee distracted. The Monday Night Messiah gave Joe the stomp, and Murphy pinned Joe for the win. So the Monday Night Messiah wins, and tomorrow night, the Monday Night Messiah will be holding a sermon on Monday Night Raw. He is, after all, the Monday Night Messiah. Are you sick yet of hearing me say Monday Night Messiah? Because I'm pretty fucking sick of hearing it myself every week. I just thought I would replicate the experience. For those of you who don't watch anymore, and you just rely on shows like mine to get your reviews of these shows, why should I have to suffer alone? You've got to join in some of this suffering as well. Also announced for tomorrow night, Rusev is back. Although he is still in the middle of a contract dispute with the company, he teams with Humberto Carrillo to take on Bob Lashley and Angel Garza, and of course the no-holds-barred match, Matt Hardy, in possibly his final WWE match. I mean, who's to say for sure, but it could very well be, taking on Randy Orton. The other thing WWE announced was a six-man gauntlet match for Sweet Saudi Money 5 next week for the, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, the Tuaik Mountain Trophy, I believe is how you pronounce it. Another meaningless trophy. How many trophies? How many trophies do we need that mean absolutely nothing? Another meaningless trophy. We're going to have Andrade Cien Almas. He'll be back from his suspension by then. Lashley, Rusev, Rowan, R-Truth, who is getting the WWE 24/7 documentary treatment on the network immediately following the Saudi show, which has the potential to be really good. I mean, if they go into his background and upbringing and everything in the early part of his career, this could be really good. And rounding out the group is AJ Styles, who I take it has been cleared from his separated shoulder, or they expect him to be cleared by then. If not, I guess they could just pull him. It's got to be the favorite to win. The big news, WrestleZone was the first to report, and it has since been confirmed by The Observer, that the current plan for WrestleMania is for AJ Styles to wrestle The Undertaker. Undertaker has not had a match since the tag team match in July of last year at Extreme Rules, tagging with Roman Reigns against Drew McIntyre and Shane McMahon. A match where he actually looked pretty good, but it's hard to say how much of that was kind of part of the illusion because he was in a tag team match. So, of course, it's going to be a little bit easier when he's in a tag team match and half the time he's standing on the apron. Then again, he had a tag team match at the Crown Jewel show last year against DX, and that was one of the worst things I'd ever seen. So, that was the last time we saw Undertaker in the ring. His last WrestleMania match was the squash over John Cena at WrestleMania 34. He skipped last year's show. And now it looks like he's coming back to wrestle AJ for the first time ever. If Undertaker is going to have a match, and I wish he wouldn't, but if he's going to have a match, there are not very many opponents better for him to step into the ring with than AJ Styles. Even a 40-year-old AJ Styles that is no longer the AJ Styles of old is still one of the best they have in the entire company. 10 years earlier, The Undertaker of 10 years ago and the AJ Styles of 10 years ago, those two could have torn the house down like Undertaker did with Shawn Michaels. Today, if AJ can bring him to a quality singles match, they could put that on his Hall of Fame resume. It would be no small victory. He really should not be in the ring anymore. Outside of maybe one last match, like the 30-year anniversary idea that I pitched for Survivor Series this year against Aleister Black, AJ's going to bump his ass off for him. He's going to make him look as good as he can possibly look. If AJ Styles cannot bring The Undertaker to a good match at WrestleMania, then nobody can. I'm intrigued by this match. Not saying that it's something that I, you know, had wanted to see, but now that it looks like it's going to happen, I am intrigued. I am intrigued to see if there's a Styles clash, no pun intended, between the two of them, how they work together. Generally, in the past, when Undertaker has worked with a guy smaller than him, and they can bounce around for him, that's why I keep thinking of the matches with Shawn Michaels. Those are the best kind of matches. You could say the same thing about Brock Lesnar. You know, I mean, Brock could also go in there and have matches that are pretty good. I mean, he had some pretty good matches back in the day against Big Show. And even The Undertaker. But it, like, now it's when you see Brock in there with the smaller guys. Like, he's going to devour Ricochet at the Saudi show. We're probably going to get some fun spots where Ricochet gets thrown around like a rag doll. Right? That's when Brock is really at his best. When they can really show, oh, they call him the Beast, right? When he's in there tossing dudes around like they're nothing, like they're weightless. That's when it gets fun. So these two may end up having terrific chemistry together, or it may not matter if Undertaker is very limited in what he can do. We're not going to know until we see the match. I'm interested in how they get to the match. What's the story that leads to the match? Does AJ win the trophy in Saudi Arabia and come out gloating on TV? And then the lights go out and the dong hits and the Undertaker comes out and he stares at the stupid sign and he walks off. You know, does AJ lose in Saudi Arabia and come out on TV all upset, and then The Undertaker comes out to confront him? Does AJ call out The Undertaker? I think the way you do it is, if AJ comes out on Raw, he talks about WrestleMania is right around the corner. We're, you know, however many weeks away now from WrestleMania, and I have no opponent for the show. That's how little this company thinks of me. He feels disrespected by this. I'm the best they got. I don't even have an opponent on the biggest show of the year. I'm the man around here. I am the true phenom in WWE. I am the phenomenal one. Do some kind of play off the whole phenom, phenomenal thing. And that's how you get this going. I mean, whether Undertaker shows up that night or he shows up a few weeks later, that's how I can see this playing out. Especially if AJ is going to be the heel in this match. But Undertaker has not had a truly good, memorable WrestleMania match. I mean, when the streak ended, it's probably the most shocking moment in company history, okay? Maybe outside of Montreal or something, but it's up there. It was a memorable moment. As a match, it sucked because he got hurt. He was concussed 5 minutes into the match. Would it have been much better if he didn't get hurt? I don't know. Maybe they just had an off night, whatever it was. It was memorable, but it wasn't good. The last truly good WrestleMania match, I believe, that The Undertaker had was WrestleMania 29. Against CM Punk. He looked better at 31 against Bray Wyatt than he did the year before, but the year before he looked like shit. So, you know, how good really was the match with him and Bray Wyatt at 31? You know, just because he looked better than he did the year before doesn't mean it was some really good match. I go all the way back to 29 in 2013, the match with CM Punk. That was a quality match. That's a long time ago. That was a long time ago. So here's hoping that AJ can pull a rambling rabbit out of his ass, because it ain't going to be easy. You know, I just think of the interview that Undertaker did with Steve Austin on the Broken Skull Sessions on the network, where he talked about now there's a whole process that is needed for a few hours before each one of his matches now to get his body ready for it, to get his body loosened up for it. And then, of course, when the match is over and the days and weeks that follow, there's a lot of pain. All of the injuries that this guy has had. You know, Kurt Angle gave an interview this week to a show out of London called TKO with these guys, Carl Frampton and Chris Lloyd. I'd never heard of them before. And I found their YouTube channel and they did a little in-studio sit-down interview for about half an hour with Kurt Angle. Really good interview. And one of them asked Kurt, if you could do it all over again, if you had the chance, would you? Would you do it all over again, your career, everything you did, the bumps, everything? Would you do it all over again if you had the chance? And Kurt admitted, he goes, I don't know. He said, I'm hurting pretty bad right now with my knees and my neck and my back. He said his quality of life right now sucks. And he has a lot of suffering. These are the words he used. Quality of life sucks. Suffering. He knew enough, albeit probably too late, to get out of the ring. He knew when it was time. He said, I just can't go anymore. And, you know, that was that. In fact, he has said that Vince McMahon, you know, it's almost like he wanted him to go another year. And Kurt said, I can't. It's got to be, you know, when they did the retirement last year, that it's got to be now. And Vince said, well, if that's the case, I'd like for you to wrestle Baron Corbin. And so that's how we got the Baron Corbin match. Kurt realized, I can't do it anymore. And just watching Kurt, even now when you watch him, when he was the general manager, he'd be on TV, his knees are bent. He couldn't even straighten his legs out. He'd be standing there and his knees are all bent. And it was just painful to watch. It was painful just to watch him walk and move around. And that's Kurt Angle. I mean, Kurt Angle beat his body to shit too. And nobody forced him to take all those bumps. Nobody forced him to do moonsaults off the top of a cage. I'm sure Kurt would say the same thing. He made those choices. Nobody forced him to do it. Nobody put a gun to his head. And unfortunately, now there are consequences that have to be paid. But it sucks, you know, because you grow up watching these guys, you respect them, you respect their work ethic and all that. And yeah, it was their choice. And so it's not our fault. It's not my fault. It's not your fault. But you feel bad for them. You don't want them to suffer. You don't want Kurt to be doing interviews talking about his six kids and how he's at home and his quality of life is shit. I mean, it broke my heart to hear him say that, because I've heard him recently say he's feeling pretty good and his neck is doing well. And this was the first time I really heard him sit there and just open up honestly and say, yeah, my quality of life right now is terrible. It sucks. And I was really thinking about that, you know, when I watched that interview yesterday, and I was thinking about this whole Undertaker thing and what he had just told Steve Austin, something kind of similar. You just get to a point where you need to think about your quality of life. And Undertaker's even older than Kurt is. He's got Kurt beat by about, what, 4 or 5 years? Kurt's 51. Undertaker's probably 55-ish. You know, and a much bigger guy. I'm surprised that with his knees, as big as he is, he's lasted this long. You just get to a point where you got to think about your quality of life. Yeah, I get it. It's his career. He can do whatever he wants. You know, he doesn't give a shit what I think. It's not my choice, it's his choice, but, you know, is it really worth it? Is it really worth it anymore? SmackDown on Fox from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada was a special Valentine's Day edition, the big date with Mandy Rose and Otis Dozer. Would it end in heartbreak? This is WWE. What do you think? We've gotten a lot of heartbreak from this SmackDown show and heartburn these last few weeks. Twitter poll, over 2,000 votes. 40% thumbs up, 60% thumbs down. So an overall thumbs down score for SmackDown. Carmella and Bayley had a match for the SmackDown Women's Championship to open the show. And Carmella had the code of silence applied. Bayley rolled through, put her feet on the ropes for the cheap win to retain the title. This was one of the better matches that I have ever seen Carmella have. I don't know if it was her best match, but if it wasn't, it was close. This was actually very good. I thought these two had a very good match together. And Bayley attacked her after the match. Out comes Naomi. Naomi and Carmella clean house. Bayley is going to defend her championship at Sweet Saudi Money on the 27th against the winner of next week's number one contenders match between Carmella and Naomi. My guess is that there's some kind of non-finish where it leads to a triple threat. And we get a three-way in Saudi Arabia with Bayley, Carmella, and Naomi. But if I had to make a prediction on a winner, if it wasn't going to end up being a triple threat, it's got to be Naomi. You know, Naomi should go over, and Naomi should be the next one in line for a championship match. Apollo Crews and Chad Gable lost to Sheamus in a 2-on-1 handicap buried alive match. An apt description for the career status of Apollo Crews and Chad Gable. Sheamus was loudly cheered like a babyface here in the bizarro land of Canada. Broke kick on Apollo Crews finishes it. It's very kind of him, though, you know, to finish these matches quickly so these two can get back to catering and have themselves a good meal in the back. I hear their tuna salad is quite good. Sami Zayn was in the ring dressed like Fidel Castro, holding a ukulele, while Cesaro had a cowbell. They were staging a protest concert in response to their treatment from Elias these past few weeks. Their concert was interrupted by Elias. Comedy ensued, including loud chants of more cowbell and massive heat when Cesaro teased more cowbell and then threw the cowbell away. Now watch the cowbell become part of his weekly gimmick now. Elias attacked, a beatdown ensued. Braun Strowman ran down to the rescue. He made the save, and he and Elias chucked one of the security goofs over the top rope into orbit. Some say the guy is still sailing through the air. They threw him so high. Michael Cole and Corey Graves conducted an interview via satellite from his beach shop in Clearwater Beach, Florida, with Hulk Hogan about going into the Hall of Fame this year as part of the NWO. He cut a Hogan promo. It felt horribly out of place on this show. Cole then asked Hogan for his thoughts on Goldberg against The Fiend at Super Showdown, and Hogan talked about being in the ring with Goldberg before, and that The Fiend needs to watch his back, Jack. And we got an NWO-style parody edition of the Firefly Funhouse from Bray, interruption from Bray, who started doing the Hogan poses. We saw Muscle Man Bray. He gave a piece of chocolate to Huskus the Pig and said he hopes that it's not too sweet. Oh my God. Bray had a framed photo of Hogan that he threatened to, put up on his wall of victims, and Hogan stormed off and said that he would see us in Tampa at the Hall of Fame, Brother Jack dude. Otis, let's talk about the only thing that matters on this stupid show. The best story going in WWE. Otis is getting ready for his date with Mandy Rose. He is just so nervous, and Mandy text messages him that she's running late, and he's talking to Tucker, and he's trying to, you know, I want to make sure I'm so nervous and everything, and Tucker is trying to just motivate him and just say, it's gonna be fine, everything's gonna go well. He's trying to be his wingman, trying to be his best friend. And the fans were, you could hear the reaction when they put the graphic on the screen showing, you know, that the date was coming up later, and they cheered wildly. They were into this. They love Otis. There was an Otis chant in the background. So then later on, they cut into the show, and they show Mandy sitting in this restaurant, which probably was the catering area in the back, or maybe it was a real restaurant. I think Dolph Ziggler was on Twitter saying it was a real restaurant. We'll take his word for it. But they cut to show Mandy sitting and waiting patiently at the restaurant for Otis to arrive. When Otis finally does arrive, he was armed with a bouquet of red roses, and he was very nervous. Finally, he musters the courage to walk over, he turns the corner, and he sees Mandy sitting at the table, and she's joined by Dolph Ziggler, who had showed up just before as a surprise. He surprised Mandy while she was waiting for Otis, and Otis was completely devastated. He dropped the red roses to the ground. This very dramatic, like, dropping of the roses on the floor. And he storms out of the restaurant. You can see and hear the exact moment that this man's heart shattered into 1,000 little itty-bitty pieces. And in one segment, in the span of 20 seconds, Dolph Ziggler just became the most hated man in all of wrestling. He became the biggest heel in all of WWE. The most despised man in the business. So the question now is, what are the theories about what happened here and where this is going and what it's all leading to? The key here is that Mandy texted Otis that she was running late for their date, and yet she was the one sitting there waiting on Otis. It didn't look like she was late at all, which means that it probably wasn't Mandy who texted Otis. It was somebody who would have texted him from Mandy's phone. So clearly it was Kevin Nash, who has some experience with this texting stuff from people's phones. Now, if it's not Kevin Nash, then it seems pretty obvious that it was Sonya Deville. Sonya might have access to Mandy's phone. He could text from her number, pretending to be her. You know, she must think Mandy even agreeing to go on a date with Otis is ridiculous. Or maybe she's jealous. Maybe we're going to go back down that road between Mandy and Sonya. My guess is she also probably tipped off Dolph Ziggler, because how else would he know where Mandy was going to be? How would he know the restaurant that she was going to be at? Somebody had to tell him. You know, the only other idea, if it wasn't Sonya, is it would have been Tucker. And I hate that idea because, you know, sabotaging his best friend, because that would spell the end of heavy machinery. And I think it's way too soon to be doing that. Plus, Tucker is dead in the water the moment he splits away from Otis. That's it. That's it for him. Not that he's not talented, but the minute that they split this team up, if one guy is going to have a nice long career for himself, and one of them isn't, you know, it's not going to be Tucker, I don't think, who's going on to have the bigger, better career than Otis. I mean, look, stranger things have happened. Otis just has he's a talented guy, And, I mean, you wouldn't really know as much because it's all comedy shtick that he's been doing in the ring. But he's got this connection with the audience that not just anybody has. They genuinely like this guy. I mean, the only thing worse that they could possibly do is turn Otis heel. That would be stupid. So I'm hoping that it isn't Tucker, that it isn't Tucker who is in on this. And my guess is it's all Sonya. I think it's Sonya. And out of it, we may end up getting a mixed tag match with Otis and Mandy against Dolph and Sonya Deville. In fact, I think they could drag this out long enough to do the match at WrestleMania. I mean, you could do Otis and Dolph one-on-one, but I would think that the mixed tag would make more sense. That way you get Mandy and Sonya on opposite ends of the ring and they can go at it. The other option you have as far as WrestleMania goes, and this wouldn't involve the women, but you have the Andre Battle Royal come down to Otis and Dolph with Mandy helping Otis win. The way, remember, Otis gave Mandy the assist at the Royal Rumble. He saved her from elimination at one point. Maybe she returns the favor. You know, she distracts Dolph or kisses Dolph, and then Otis knocks him out of the ring, and Otis can get a big Andre Battle Royal win and get to kiss the girl. Mandy can plant a wet one on him when the match is over. I could see that happening too. That would at least make the Andre Battle Royal valuable in some way. It would actually make it interesting, because I don't give a shit about the Andre Battle Royal. But I am so much more invested in this romance story than I ever was. That Lana, Rusev, Lashley horse shit. Otis is a likable guy. You feel actual remorse for this character. People were genuinely upset at Dolph Ziggler over what he did here. I would not be surprised if you had crazy wrestling fans sending the man death threats for what he had done. That just means that they're all doing their job well. And I said it first, and I will continue to say it loud and proud, the best story going right now in all of WWE. So the final segment here in the restaurant, it was short. It was shorter than I would have liked for it to be. But it's not the end of the story. It's the next chapter. It's the next part. And it's a good thing they didn't just go the predictable route and have Mandy fuck over Otis. I think she's being manipulated unwittingly by her partner, and I look forward to seeing how the whole story plays out. So I enjoyed it, but at the same time, it was heartbreaking to watch, you know, poor Otis get screwed over like that. And Roman Reigns tagged with Daniel Bryan to beat The Miz and Morrison, which was stupid, given that they're the number one contenders for the tag team titles. Why did they have to lose here to a makeshift team? Who knows? King Corbin was banned from the show after pouring a drink on a fan's head in the audience, a planted fan the week before, and I assume also for beating up one of Kevin Dunn's worker bees and throwing him down a flight of stairs the week before. But he showed up anyway. He had a ticket in his hand. He was a fan. And he attacked Roman Reigns when the match was over. This man, who was not even allowed to be on the show, then posed on top of his throne, which was conveniently waiting for him. That's how the show went off the air. Now, local advertising, and this is a bit of a spoiler if you don't want to know anything about the Elimination Chamber. Local advertising in Philadelphia for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view next month is advertising a SmackDown Chamber match featuring Roman Reigns versus King Corbin versus Daniel Bryan versus Braun Strowman versus Shinsuke Nakamura versus Robert Roode, with the winner earning a shot at the Universal title at WrestleMania. Roode, and possibly even Nakamura, but Roode has got to be a placeholder. If he's not a placeholder, he's got to be in there to get jumped by somebody bigger. Sheamus comes to mind. Although it would be nice if they gave the spot to someone like Mustafa Ali, who has been doing nothing, hasn't even been on television, and was left out of last year's Chamber match after he got hurt by Randy Orton. He lost a very big spot in that Chamber match last year. So it could be nice to maybe get him in there. He's not going to win, but maybe work him into it. But I could see Sheamus being the one to kind of take that spot away from Roode either that night or, you know, beat him up a week before on TV, something like that. But let's not lose sight of the fact that if this lineup is accurate, forget all of that. If this lineup is accurate and stays the way that it appears to be, that means yet another match involving Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin. It's the story that never fucking ends. Soon I'm going to have to give you guys a buy or sell. Buy or sell, do you want to hear me say Monday Night Messiah 50,000 times, or would you rather hear me review 10 more Roman Reigns Baron Corbin matches this year? You could chew on that for a little bit. AEW. AEW notched another ratings win over NXT this week, but the bigger story was the drop for Dynamite. Both shows were down. AEW was down over 100,000 viewers, which is no good. They dropped from 928,000 the week before to 817,000. NXT also dropped, although not by nearly as much. They dropped from 770 to 757,000. And it's really too bad because I thought Wednesday's Dynamite show was their best one yet. I thought it was an excellent show from top to bottom, highlighted by the debut of Jeff Cobb as Chris Jericho's hired gun, his hired assassin, his bounty hunter, I think he called him, to take out Jon Moxley on TV this Wednesday, and Nyla Rose beating Riho to win the AEW Women's Championship. I thought they had a fun match together, and there's been a lot of talk and debate about Nyla. There's a question in the mailbag that, you know, it's going to spark some debate. I'm going to answer that, give you my thoughts on the whole Nyla Rose thing later. But I thought the two of them had a fun match together. Kenny Omega and Hangman Page, they beat SCU in a very good match. MJF and Jungle Boy, they had a good match. And the crowd in Austin, Texas treated both these guys like total stars. Stars of the future. That crowd in Austin was hot all night. I gave them their props on Wednesday. I got to give it to them again here. They were a great audience all night long for everything they did. Santana, he brought the fire in his sit-down interview with Jim Ross before his main event, Eye for an Eye, against Jon Moxley. They've done a good job of finally bringing these promos and vignettes to the show instead of just saving them all for YouTube or Twitter. There was a great pack training video promoting the Iron Man match with Kenny Omega in 2 weeks in Kansas City. It just felt like they were firing on all cylinders. Now, Jeff Cobb is not in full-time with AEW. His Ring of Honor deal expired at the beginning of the year, and he elected not to sign a new one, but he is still working for Ring of Honor and also for New Japan. But he is a free agent, so he can work anywhere he wants, except WWE, for all the obvious reasons. You can't be a true independent contractor and a true free agent and work for WWE. Cody has reportedly offered him a deal if he wants it. There's a deal on the table. They would love to have him. They would love to sign him. But he's not signing anything yet. So I would expect him to either lose to Moxley he's going to lose either way. Either loses straight up or they do some kind of DQ finish where the Inner Circle gets involved. But Cobb, if you don't know who he is, if you're not aware of him and his background, he's very good. He's very good. And he also played the monster Matanza on Lucha Underground. You can look up some of his matches and look up some of his work. And I think largely you'll find a pretty impressive body of work from him. So I'm looking forward to seeing him there. Now, Brandi Rhodes gave an interview to Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi on Wrestling Observer Live and confirmed that the Nightmare Collective is dead, or at least her involvement in the Nightmare Collective is dead. Poor Mel. Poor Mel. Got her head shaved for nothing. Although it sounds like they might keep her and Luther together as like an undercard act. But she talked about the fact that, you know, the concept and the idea behind the Nightmare Collective really deviated from the original idea, which was going to be her managing Awesome Kong. There were never plans in place for a Nightmare Collective stable. You know, it really was just an idea for her to manage Awesome Kong. And Kong physically just wasn't feeling great. And so they had discussions and they put plans in motion for this Nightmare Collective to form. And it would have Mel and it would have Dr. Luther. And she said things didn't go as planned. She said, I started to see that the music was not playing how I liked it. I didn't feel it, she said. And she said that she and the fans were on the same page, that the storyline was going too fast and there was really no explanation behind it and why she was behaving this way. So she said that she made the changes She made a whole series of videos trying to explain the storyline a little bit better. And they hired an actress to portray a therapist, her therapist in the skits and everything. And she said that her coming to the aid of her husband last week when he was getting those lashes from MJF was meant to be the end of her involvement in the Nightmare Collective. Even if Mel and Luther do stay together. And so she said, hopefully the fans are cool with it. You know, I accept it. It didn't work out. We can move forward from here. And I give her a lot of credit. You know, I give the company a lot of credit for recognizing that it wasn't working. It really wasn't. It wasn't working. It just, the whole thing was just too weird. And it just seemed like she was totally miscast. I think Brandy can be an effective character on TV. Look, I don't want to say that she can only be effective when she's with her husband, but her and Cody is a combo. It just works. You know, and so she was miscast and it was just dumb and it just wasn't working. So instead of forcing it down people's throats and saying, you're going to like it no matter what, we're going to make you like it. And how many times have we seen WWE do that? They said, you know what? This isn't working. So let's end it. Let's get away from it. So credit to them for that. Cody did an interview with The Observer as well. He confirmed that a secondary title is on the way soon. Another championship in AEW. It may take a while. They're taking things very slowly, so it could be months before we see anything. And he says it's an idea that has never been done before. And that has started speculation that it could potentially be an intergender tag team title. And not necessarily a singles title. Perhaps that the match from the Jericho Cruise that they did may have been something of a test with Kenny Omega teaming with Riho against Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford. I watched that match live on the boat and I thought it was great. But I think, I still think that they need another singles title for the men. I'm hoping that's what this is. You know, the NWA is doing something innovative right now with its television title. And they have this Lucky Seven rule where if the champion can win or if he can at least go to a time limit draw, every TV title match has a 6 minute, 5 second time limit, the whole, you know, old school 605 on TBS thing. So if you win or if you go to a time limit draw and you are the television champion, if you win seven straight times, if that happens seven straight matches, you earn a shot at the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship. That's a cool concept. That's thinking out of the box a little bit. That's putting a new spin on things. What other never-before-seen concept could they realistically do for their secondary title if it's not something along the lines of an intergender tag team title? This Wednesday, it's another loaded lineup with Cody and Wardlow in the first ever cage match in AEW. Moxley takes on Jeff Cobb, Kenny Omega and Hangman defend their tag team titles against the Lucha Bros, and a tag team battle royal to earn a shot at the champions, whomever they may be, at the Revolution pay-per-view. Then in 2 weeks, the go-home Dynamite in Kansas City, Kenny Omega takes on Pac in a 30-minute Iron Man match. Speaking of the NWA, I did watch Power. I really don't have a lot to say about it this week. I do want to mention Thunder Rosa went on her social media and mentioned the other day that she and her husband were involved in a hit-and-run car accident. And it was the scariest moment of her life. She thought that she was going to die right there on the freeway. Very scary stuff. Thankfully, they're okay outside of some minor damage to their car. But I guess the car was damaged enough and, you know, she needs her car. And to help pay for the repairs, she is selling some of her ring gear. And so if you are interested in purchasing said ring gear and supporting her and helping her, you can send her a DM. Although you may have to be following her, but you can send her a DM on Twitter or shoot her an email. Just check her Twitter for more information. I'm glad she's okay. That's the most important thing. I'm glad she's okay. But again, this episode of Power, not the most exciting episode this week, outside of what I thought was a nice TV title match with Ricky Starks beating Matt Cross. And it was nice to see the bouncers from Ring of Honor make an appearance. You know, always good to see the Beer City Bruiser. They beat the Dawsons. Sean Mooney did an event center update hyping up the Crockett Cup match for the NWA Championship, which has now been accepted. Nick Aldis accepted the counter proposal from Marty Scurll. Scurll said that he would put up $500,000 of his own money if he loses, either that or he becomes the new champion. So that is the stipulation for their match in April. There will be no NWA Power this Tuesday. It is being replaced for 1 week. Power is taking a one-week break, and in its place will be the debut of a new NWA show called The Circle Square, which is a tryout-style, almost sounds like a Tough Enough-style show, spotlighting potential new talent. In the end, I think only one gets a contract with the NWA. The description on the NWA website reads as follows. This series will allow new talents an opportunity to put their money where their mouth is to get a chance to earn an NWA talent contract. This competition shows, allows talents, rather, selected to step up to the circle of the podium to exhibit their talents on the microphone before stepping into the square of the ring to show their physical abilities in a wrestling match. The key to making the NWA roster will be in their ability to connect with the live audience in Atlanta and the audience watching all over the world. The ultimate winner of the Circle Squared will earn a National Wrestling Alliance contract. Now, I know they've already taped a few matches for this using independent talent, so I don't think this is like Tough Enough where you're just pulling people in off the street, but it's a tryout-style show, like a little reality show for themselves. I'm going to try to check it out. I'm not sure, but you know, obviously there will be no Power review at all next week, and hopefully the show will be back the following Tuesday in its normal time slot. It's time for this week's RSPW Rewind. One of the biggest moments and a turning point during the Monday Night War between WWE and WCW came on January 4th, 1999. I think January 4th is just one of those dates, if you were a fan of that period, that you still remember today. It's a date that stands out. Raw was taped from the week prior, the year prior, I guess you could say, with the main event of Mankind challenging The Rock for the WWE title, while over on Nitro, they were live at the Georgia Dome with the main event of Kevin Nash defending his newly won WCW World title against Hollywood Hogan. This was after Kevin Nash became the first man to beat Goldberg. He broke the streak at Starrcade, which was suspect in and of itself. Think about that. We went from ending Goldberg's streak to this. These two back-to-back events. It's no wonder WCW began a steep decline after this. There had been a split within the NWO, or so they wanted us to believe. This was the night of the infamous Finger Poke of Doom, where Nash laid down for Hogan while Eric Bischoff had Tony Schiavone talk about how over on that other channel, they're going to put their world title on Mick Foley. That's going to put some butts in the seats. And 600,000 people proceeded to change the channel and switch over to Monday Night Raw because Eric Dipshit just told them that they were going to see a title change. Even WWE spoiled the title change on their own website the day after it was taped. I remember that. I remember being upset about that. No warning or anything. There it was. Boom, right there on WWE.com, or I guess at the time it was WWF.com, because they wanted to get people to tune in the following week. Now, that was also the night that Stone Cold returned after being gone only a few weeks. I think he was out with a minor knee injury. But you would think he had been gone for months or years. The pop that he got walking out to the ring that night when he hit The Rock in the head with a steel chair. The biggest pop I've ever heard in all my life when that glass shattered and he came marching down to that ring. Let's go back to the end of 1998 after the taping and see what the fine folks of RSPW were saying about it at that time. HSB3. See, you thought I was going to say HSBC, but oh no. HSB3 says, on December 30th, 1998, in a post titled, "Biggest RSPW Spoiler, Jack, It Happened." So it just went by WrestleManiacs, and Mankind is the new WWF Heavyweight Wrestling Champion of the World. I think the only way Nitro can hope to beat Raw now is to have Macho Man's new gal come out naked. Wow, talk about opening up the door for the Royal Rumble now. Rocky, Austin, Kane, although not likely. Undertaker, McMahon, not likely. Triple H, not likely. HBK, if he's in it. Shamrock, all different contenders to win the Royal Rumble. Not to mention Mankind could even lose the championship from the following week's Raw, anytime up until WrestleMania 15. Who would have ever thought that 1 year ago, Mankind would be the world champion having beaten The Rock, Ken Shamrock would be the Intercontinental Champion having won a tournament, Shamrock and Ray Trailer tag team champions beating the New Age Outlaws, Dwayne Gill, light heavyweight champion, beating the rookie Christian, Road Dogg, hardcore champion, beat Ray Trailer. I don't know why he keeps calling him Ray Trailer, just call him the Big Boss Man. And that Road Dogg hardcore title reign, I maintain, is very underrated. I enjoyed the Road Dogg hardcore title reign back in 99. And he says, Sable, women's champion having beaten Jackie. The only predictable things are Shamrock as the IC champ, and the light heavyweight title still sucking, despite having some of the best junior heavyweights in the world. D. Torciello claps back on that point about this opening up a lot of possibilities for the Royal Rumble by saying, no, Rock retakes the title from Foley at the Royal Rumble. Austin wins the Rumble for the 17th consecutive year and takes the title back from The Rock at WrestleMania. The storyline could deviate from this, but I doubt it. The title change does provide a wonderful excuse, though, for Vince McMahon to give us a Foley against Rock match for the 100th time in the last 3 months. Well, he was close. Vince won the Rumble, but Rock did win the title back, and Austin beat him for it at WrestleMania, so he wasn't too far off. Jason Aristate, on December 30th, here with a post titled, Mick Foley wins the WWF World title. Well, since this has already been broadcast, I don't feel the need to put a spoiler header, he says. But I wish, I just wanted to confirm it since I was at the Worcester, Massachusetts Raw tapings live. Mick Foley did indeed capture the World Wrestling Federation Championship over The Rock with help from a chair shot by Steve Austin. The arena went absolutely nuts, and Foley celebrated with DX at the end and gave a heartwarming speech about his victory and dedicated the match to his two children. Yeah, Mick will more than likely job the title back to Rock at the Royal Rumble, but for at least a couple of weeks, Foley can finally be a world champion. What a way to combat next week's WCW Georgia Dome Nitro. What a moment tonight. I wish you all could have been there. So, a very nice post here by Mr. Jason Aristate, who was at the taping and couldn't wait to tell the world about it, and I guess did not feel the need to put a spoiler header since he saw other people already talking about it. Well, that lack of a spoiler header did not go over very well here with the fine, upstanding folks of RSPW. As the first reply here to his post was a one-word response, and that response was, asshole. It only went downhill from here. Double X Strength says, this is too funny. Hey, when you reply to everything that gets posted in here tomorrow night, try calling everyone poopy heads. It's right up your alley, Skidmark. I'm not even sure who he was referring to. If he was replying to the person who said asshole, or if he was replying to the original poster. Corey Collins says, hey, fuckweed. He has a right to do it. He's pissed. I'm pissed. And I'm sure others are pissed that a bunch of dickfaces posted about Mick Foley winning the fucking title with no spoiler space or shit like that. So fuck you. Terry Acolyte does a run-in with some common sense. He says, if you don't want to know what's going to happen, then don't read RSPW or check the websites, you dumbasses. See, I tell people that all the time. And this was over 20 years ago. Mr. 420 disagrees with that logic and says, I shouldn't have to go a week without reading RSPW. It's a common practice used by every news group to give spoiler warnings or spoiler space. When you don't want to know the ending of a new movie, do you stay away from all of your friends that have already seen it? No, you assume that your friends will be considerate enough to not give away the damn ending. Why should this group be any different? Terry Acolyte says, you consider people on RSPW your friends? You are a real dumb shit. A large part of RSPW and internet websites is for knowing what's going to happen before it happens. Deal with it. Leave if you don't like it, loser. Mr. 420 responds. Says, obviously, we wouldn't be in this group if we didn't take wrestling a little more serious than the average fan. Some people enjoy watching it, not reading about it. You assholes can keep posting spoilers in the subject if you want, but each and every damn time I'm going to respond and complain about it. Not reading the group for a week is not an acceptable option to me, so if I gotta put up with people posting spoilers without any warning, then you're just gonna have to put up with me bitching about it. So now, not only do we have posts bitching about various things, but now we have threats to bitch on future posts. Just love how an excited post about Mick Foley winning the championship turned into a total shit show, with nobody actually discussing the fact that Mick Foley just won his first world title. It just turned into a flame war over spoiler tags in 1998. Actually, you know what? I did this out of order because there was another spoiler post before this one that made me laugh out loud when I first read the responses. I think this one actually came first because some of the same people posting replies at first didn't believe the news that Foley had even won the title. This is another December 30th, 1998 post. This one from Ron with the headline, and I shit you not, this is the headline he put. He tried to be considerate, okay? He made an effort to be. The title, spoiler, ... Mankind, new WWF champ, with about 10 exclamation points. It says, on next week's Raw, Mankind beats Rocky for the title. That was it. That was the entire body of the post. And Mr. 420 replied, liar, where did you hear that bullshit? Terry Acolyte nearly busted a gut laughing, LOL. Thanks for the spoiler warning. LOLOL. Big and Loud says, actually, check out WWF.com and you will see it's the truth. Long live Foley. Eatin' Beans says, no joke. He's not lying. Mankind wins. Check out any of the wrestling news websites. Mad says, I think you need to be educated to the proper way to use the word spoiler. It doesn't work if you put spoiler and then put what you are spoiling for everyone in the subject line. Duh. Storm Rider says, he put it at the beginning of the subject line. After you read the word spoiler, if you don't want to know, don't read the rest of the subject line. Duh. But Mad had a different opinion about this situation. He says, well, guess what? When you read the word spoiler, your eyes already see the rest of the sentence, dumbass. And Mike Two Scoops Malecki ends the thread with this. Way to put spoiler in the heading and then put the spoiler right next to it. You are a fucking... Well, that's not very nice. That is not very nice. Does no one on RSPW care that Mick Foley just won his first world championship? All they seem to care about is that it was spoiled. It's almost like winning the championship was an afterthought here. That's what got me by reading all of these different posts. We fast forward a week to the night of the broadcast, January 4th, 1999, and a post by Owen Aardvark titled, Tony Rips on Raw and Mick Foley. It says, I was flipping between Raw and Nitro, and I heard Tony Schiavone make this comment, Mick Foley, who wrestled in WCW as Cactus Jack, will be given their world title tonight. Boy, that'll put some butts into those seats. He is more right than he even realizes. Why do I feel that WCW will lose tonight because of what Tony said? And finally, the day after, on January 5th, 1999, Joe Sixpack, with a post titled, Mick Foley Sucks, Undeserving of the WWF title. He is just a stupid, fat, toothless New Yorker with no technical wrestling skills and can't get over without mutilating himself to get heat from his sick bunch of suburbanite loser fans. You all suck, and Foley is your wuss poster boy. Is that Ric Flair? Was Ric Flair posting on RSPW in 1999? I think he might have been. X Betray X says, whatever. Go back to watching Nitro. Anyone that saw King of Deathmatch 95 knows that Foley is more than deserving of any title. Joe Sixpack was having none of it. He says, you all suck. Living in the corrupted Northeast and watching ECW has corrupted you all. Real Wrestling is the Freebirds, Magnum TA, World Class, and Mid-South circa 1983. I repeat, you all suck. Go away. May you have freak skateboard accidents, suffer from tattoo needle infections, and go blind from watching MTV2. MTV2, he says. Not MTV. MTV2. Is that the reputation that we have here in the Northeast? I mean, I know it's been 20 years, but I hope that's not the reputation that we have here in the Northeast. I haven't ridden a skateboard since I was probably 11 years old. Win Wright brings some civility to the group with this reply. I think Foley deserves the title more than anyone else in the WWF. He's been through more shit in 15 years than any other wrestler in history. Let's see. 1995 King of Deathmatch tournament, tag teaming with Kevin Sullivan, that would make anyone crazy. A deathmatch with Vader, holding every major belt in WWF except the IC and World Heavyweight, and holding tag team belts in WCW and ECW. Go Mick, long live the greatest champion ever. Jeff Amder says, you've got to be kidding. Mick is one of the hardest working and crowd pleasingest workers in the business. He's no Ray or Kidman when it comes to technical prowess, but as far as work rate, brawling, and connecting with the crowd, he has no peer in recent memory. You'd rather have a non-working, boring Hogan as your champion. It's nice to end with a positive post. I wanted to end with something positive. That was a nice defense of Mick Foley, who did work hard, and I don't think Foley ever expected to be world champion. And it was a nice little reward. Not only did he win the world title in 99, he won it three times that year. But this has been your weekly reminder that the best way not to be spoiled is to stay the hell away from RSPW, or any other wrestling news group for that matter. Let's take some mailbag questions. You can always email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. That will always help your chances of getting your question read here on the show. We'll start here with Adam in St. Louis with what he calls a controversial question about Nyla Rose. Is it easy to suspend your disbelief when watching Nyla Rose wrestle women? It's kind of hard for me. I always end up reminding myself that she is genetically a male. It doesn't piss me off like seeing a man who may be transgender in an MMA fight against a woman. That's just wrong. But I still don't really know how to feel. Not even so much that she shouldn't wrestle women. I just can't see someone like Riho beating her. She needs a big woman as an opponent for me to even believe that she might lose. What do you think? Well, to answer your question, no. It's not that hard for me to suspend my disbelief. Nyla and Riho had a match on the very first episode of Dynamite, back at the beginning of October. A match that Riho was booked to win. A match that I didn't think was anything special. I thought their match this week was much better. But Riho won the first one. She beat her the first time. And I don't recall thinking to myself that it was too unbelievable. They played up the David and Goliath story, only they did it with women. How many times have we seen the giant 7-foot monster against the undersized male wrestler? You know, there is a way to tell that story without it coming off, I think, is too unbelievable. And look, some people are just not going to buy into it at all. I'm not saying you're wrong. That's fine. Some people can't buy into Marco Stunt having a serious match. Some people can't buy into Brock Lesnar and Ricochet at Sweet Saudi Money next week. They laugh even at the mere idea of it. Some people just can't get over that. That's fine. To each their own. But this, it didn't bother me. The way they, you know, laid out the match and told the story, I bought into it just fine. I think there's a way to do it. Now, you mentioned MMA. In MMA, it might bother me. Yes, there could be an unfair, I think, competitive advantage. What was it? Was it Fallon Fox? Is that the name of the person? Fallon Fox? I think Fallon Fox was the first transgender MMA athlete or openly transgender MMA fighter. And a few years ago, Fallon Fox beat the living shit out of her opponent. And the woman after the fight said that she had never faced another fighter as strong, like physically strong, as Fallon Fox. She had never been beat up by anybody like that before. And I think she suffered a fractured eye socket because there was a whole big controversy about it at the time. And this is going back a whole bunch of years. So I vaguely remember this. And maybe the other woman was just a shitty fighter. And that's why she lost. That's also a possibility. She's just looking for excuses. I don't know enough about the Fallon Fox stuff to really say any more than that. In a combat sport, it would bother me. But it really depends on the situation, and I think it depends on the individual fighter. You still need to be cleared to compete by the State Athletic Commission. If there's an unfair advantage that one person has over the other, I would think, I would hope, that the commission would not allow it. Although the way some of these athletic commissions operate, I'm probably just being naive. Pro wrestling is a different beast, though. It's staged. Whatever competitive advantage she may have is not the same as it would be in MMA. It's not the same as it would be in any other sport. To me, it's apples and oranges. The only potential advantage that I could see for her is if she's able to throw these tiny little Japanese women around on TV like ragdolls. You know, maybe they give her a China-like push. You could argue that that's already what they're doing. They give her a China-like push as the monster of the division who just rips through everybody. And so if they protect her and they push her to the moon, then you could argue, hey, that's not fair. That's a sort of competitive advantage. You know, she's getting more TV time. She's being booked strongly, more strongly than any other woman on the roster. That's not fair. But again, to me, it's just not the same thing. It's wrestling. If it wasn't Nyla, it would be Riho. And people did complain about Riho. Oh, she's just be the champion because Kenny Omega likes her. That's not fair. Brandi Rhodes. Oh, of course, she's Cody's wife. That's not fair. You could argue that Britt Baker being a dentist is even more of a competitive advantage because they won't shut up about it on TV. And now she's a heel and she's getting more TV time than any other woman on the roster. Chris Statlander is an alien from another planet. That's not fair. The point is, you're always going to have somebody bitching and complaining that something is not fair, no matter who is being pushed. Nyla is, you know, that's why this whole story this week about The Rock's daughter, Simone Johnson, just signed on with WWE to train at the Performance Center, and if she goes on to wrestle for them, she'll be the first fourth-generation star, and she's going to have a tough road ahead of her, because even if she's got talent, and she takes to it like a duck to water, and it's in her blood, and she turns out to be a very good wrestler, until she can really break out on her own, she's going to have the same problem that Charlotte had, and the same problem a lot of these people have. She's only getting the shot because of her father. She's only there because her dad is The Rock, and they want to make The Rock happy. It's not fair. It's always going to be situations like that. Nyla is not 6'5", 300 pounds. She's hardly some kind of giant. And beyond her doing some power moves in the ring, if you know how to book pro wrestling the correct way, if you are competent booking professional wrestling, there are plenty of people you can put her in the ring with and tell a good story and make it believable. And one last word on this, because this has been happening more and more. It's been happening with more frequency. All the people who go out of their way to denigrate Nyla Rose, and every time somebody says, oh, she did this, she hit the ropes. Oh, no, you mean he did this, he hit the ropes. They have to remind you of that. Oh, you're wrong. It's he. You've got to use the right word. You've got to use the right pronoun. You know, all this stuff every single week. And it really is getting very sickening to see. Like, if that's your opinion on the matter, if this is how you honestly feel, voice your opinion and move on. These people, it's like Nyla is living rent-free. People can't stop talking about her. She's living rent-free in these people's heads. What does it matter to you? Why do some of these people feel the need to constantly bring it up over and over again? And clearly they're doing it in a way just to insult, you know, the way some of the things they say. I mean, there's a lot of people showing their ass on this. And this week was the worst because, of course, Nyla won the championship. And it's just getting to the point of being just nauseating already. Like, enough. You've made your point. This is your viewpoint. And hey, that's certainly your viewpoint on things. Move on. You know, Nyla Rose is the women's champion in AEW. And that's just the way it is. That's the way it's going to be. You don't like it? Tough shit. What does it matter to you? Why is it such a big deal to you that these people just comment on it over and over and over again? And they have to use these little derogatory phrases like they're so offended. No. You've got to identify it as this way. This is the correct way to do it. Who cares? Who cares what you think? Gives a shit. You think Nyla Rose cares what you think? You think AEW gives a shit? Get over it. Devin from New Jersey. After watching MJF's altercation with a fan at the end of AEW last week, my dad thought that in those kinds of situations where the fans don't actually attack the wrestlers themselves, it's best for security to handle the situation and not the wrestlers. He compared the situation to police brutality and bar fights where it's illegal and an abuse of power for cops, security guards, or bartenders to attack the perpetrator upon throwing them out just to, quote, send a message. While I don't necessarily agree with this logic, I do think it's an interesting comparison to make. What are your thoughts? First of all, it wasn't a fan. I mean, in the context of your question, it's not important. But just for the record, it was not a fan. It was Frankie Kazarian playing a fan. And that comes from a listener of the show who was right there and saw the whole thing go down. It was Frankie Kazarian, not a fan. But that's beside the point. There's a lot of rules out there for situations like that. I didn't know about that, for example, about bartenders. That's the first I'm hearing about it, that there's some kind of bartender's code where you have to conduct yourself in a certain way. You're not allowed to really, you know, do this or do that. But there was a story recently about a female Best Buy employee in Hawaii who body checked the shit out of a would-be shoplifter who was allegedly trying to steal a stereo speaker. I saw the video. They had surveillance video of the whole thing. She never raised the fist to the guy, but she didn't have to. She violently blocked him, shall we say, from leaving the store. And she ended up getting fired, and she lost her job because of it. And then Dana White of UFC heard the story and said that he was appalled that she got fired, and he said he's flying her out to the UFC event, and he wanted to offer her a job. I don't know if he ended up offering her a job or if she took it or not, but that was a big story a few months ago. He thought Best Buy was nuts for getting rid of this woman. Now, Best Buy was probably worried about getting sued, which is why they fired her. You know, in a case like that, your job is not to tackle people to the ground if they're stealing something. It doesn't say, you know, employee slash linebacker in the job description. If your health and well-being and your life is in no imminent danger, then what do you care? Just report it to somebody and let the person steal it. Somebody else will probably stop them anyway. And if not, well, you know, it's stolen merchandise. You know, shit happens. Best Buy doesn't give a shit about you. They'll survive just fine without their stereo speaker. Your life is worth more than a stereo speaker. You know, your life is worth more than a piece of electronics from Best Buy. Let them steal it. My issue is when somebody attacks you or is coming at you and you fear for your safety, you fear for your life. You don't know if they have a weapon on them, as is the case a lot of times with these wrestlers. We're not talking about cops. Cops are armed. Wrestlers are not. That's the distinction I would make here. This is not the same opinion I necessarily have on law enforcement, because I look at that as a totally different issue, and I'm not getting into that. We're talking about pro wrestlers here. A lot of the times, these wrestlers, when somebody jumps the barricade or something, they don't have a weapon in their hand. You should be allowed to defend yourself in a reasonable way. If that means you tackle them to the ground, then so be it. Throw a punch, throw a kick, fine. Get that person down, and then you let security drag them away. Security is not always front and center there to protect you. They're not the Secret Service. They're not going to take a bullet for you. If it were me, and I saw security was right there and they could handle the situation, look, I'm not a fighter. I would step back and let security do their job. But I'm not going to wait to find out what happens to me if I see some guy coming at me and there's no one there to stop him. Your ass is going down. It's as simple as that. I don't see it as any kind of abuse of power like a cop who roughs up somebody for no good reason, like you would see sometimes on dash cam video or like body cameras. That's a totally different thing. These wrestlers are not armed with a deadly weapon. I'm not saying that AEW should arm Riho and start having her pistol whipping fans who get too close to her. Kevin from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, home of Sesame Place. Do you have a favorite Goldberg match or moment? And do you think he will defeat Bray Wyatt? My favorite Goldberg match and moment was the match where he beat Raven on Nitro to win the United States Championship. My favorite moment was from that match. It was the first spear that Raven got hit with. And the way the crowd just erupted and visibly rose to its feet in unison. It was like somebody pushed a button for like heated seats in the building and like turned the temperature up to like 200 degrees. Everybody just popped up out of their seat. As soon as Goldberg hit that spear, he broke this guy in half. It was awesome. I'll never forget that as long as I live. Do I think Goldberg is beating The Fiend? No, I don't. Rob from the Bronx on this week's Something to Wrestle With about Sherry Martel. Conrad says that a couple of years ago, Chris Jericho suggested to Vince McMahon a sensational invitational Memorial Battle Royal. I wonder where Y2J got that idea from. Yes, I wonder. I guess great minds think alike. Deuce from Kansas City with his very first mailbag question. He's been listening since 2013. With WWE obviously gearing toward Shayna Baszler against Becky Lynch for the Raw Women's Championship and Rhea Ripley against Charlotte Flair for the NXT Women's Championship at WrestleMania, what do you think about this? With Sasha Banks' status up in the air right now, and it's looking like they might be leaning towards Bayley against Naomi for the SmackDown Women's title, what would you think about them keeping the same NXT energy across the board and start setting up Bayley against Bianca Belair for the SmackDown Women's title? Not that I have anything against Naomi, but personally I'd be more interested in Bayley against Bianca. Bianca loses to Rhea at TakeOver. She's upset, but determined to get gold. One way or another, she shows up on SmackDown and attacks Bayley to set up the match, kind of like Shayna attacked Becky, but without the cannibalistic zombie bite to the back of the neck. What would you think about that? That's a great question. I don't hate the idea of trying to find a role for Bianca on the WrestleMania card because I just think I think she's really good, and I think she's going to be one of the top three stars on either Raw or SmackDown in that women's division sometime this year. Guaranteed. I even said on the prediction show last month, Bianca Belair will hold gold on Raw or SmackDown sometime in 2020. Not NXT. She will be a champion, but it will not be an NXT. But I don't think you can do Naomi dirty like that. Now, when I got the email, I believe this email came in before SmackDown. And now, with SmackDown in the books, we know that Naomi is facing Carmella next week. The winner will face Bayley for the championship in Saudi Arabia. It's either going to be Naomi or it's going to end up being a triple threat. The question is, coming out of the Saudi show, is there still, you know, a story there for Naomi? Or do they just blow it off and have her lose to Bayley? Or can they drag this out until WrestleMania? Yeah, because Naomi was gone for months. She comes back at the Royal Rumble, gets a great reaction. The people seem to like her. Last week, she eats the pin in that four-way, making Carmella the number one contender. Carmella got her title shot on Friday. Now she faces Naomi, as I said, next week, to see who faces Bayley in Saudi Arabia. Whether she wins the title or not, Naomi deserves her shot before Bianca gets hers. And she's going to get it. And we'll see, again, we'll see how the story plays out. But if Sasha Banks is going to be ready in time for WrestleMania, and I don't know exactly what's going on with Sasha. I don't know if the whole ankle injury was just, I know it was a worked injury on TV that may also be a real injury. Andrew from the Mat Men Wrestling Podcast had a bit of news and said that Sasha Banks, from what he has heard, and this is not 100% confirmed, has been filming scenes, I don't know when she finished, but she is going to be part of season 2 of The Mandalorian. Which reminds me, I have to finish season 1. I watched the first episode, and then I just got diverted to a whole bunch of other shows. So I've only seen the first episode from season 1 of The Mandalorian. I'm not a Star Wars fan, but people said, you could still watch it and get into it. You don't have to have watched any of the Star Wars movies. I was intrigued by the first episode, and I want to finish it. That reminds me I have to get back to it. But according to Andrew, she is going to be appearing on season 2 of The Mandalorian. So maybe she was missing in action because she was filming scenes for the TV show. Maybe she wasn't really hurt at all you know? But my hope is that if she was, she'll be all healed up and ready to come back in time for WrestleMania. And if she is, I don't think you look to NXT. I think you look at your current roster and you go with Sasha Banks challenging Bayley for the championship at WrestleMania with Sasha winning the belt. That is if they just blow off the Naomi story. If they continue the Naomi story, then you could take that all the way to WrestleMania. Either way, I don't think you need Bianca challenging for the title. I just think it's not fair to these other women who should be in there with Bayley first. And you could always do Bianca after WrestleMania. Billy in Des Moines, now that the first AEW title changes have taken place with Omega and Hangman beating SCU and now Nyla beating Riho, is it safe to say that AEW kind of missed the boat with their choices for first tag team and women's champions? It's indisputable that Jericho has been the perfect first men's world champion for AEW. But I would say that both SCU and Riho's reigns were pretty forgettable. I'm a huge AEW fan. I'm rooting for the company to succeed, but just looking back, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on their initial champions' runs, and what would you have done differently? Jericho was the perfect pick to be the first world champion. The other two, I agree. I would not have gone with SCU or Riho. I would have gone with the Jurassic Express as the first tag team champions, but Luchasaurus got hurt, and they replaced him with Marco Stunt. So that wasn't their fault. But the finals were, if you remember the tag team tournament finals, were the Lucha Bros against SCU. And I would have had Pentagon and Phoenix go over to win the belts. Now, as far as the women's championship, I would have had Mercedes Martinez win that casino battle royal they did last year. The one that Nyla Rose won. I think it was at All Out. I think Mercedes was the, what they call her, the Joker card or something. She entered last in that battle royal and got a nice reaction, and she's a veteran of the business. I would have had Mercedes win. Have her win, and then Hikaru Shida beats Riho later that night instead of the other way around. And then on that first Dynamite show in October, instead of Nyla Rose against Riho, we get Mercedes Martinez against Hikaru Shida, with Mercedes going over and winning the championship. Either one of those women would have made a great first champion. But I would have given it to Mercedes had she been signed. I'm kind of shocked that AEW did not snatch her up after she made that appearance, but it's possible that she just took it as a one-off. And she was waiting on a deal from WWE the whole time. You remember, she was in the Mae Young Classic. So if her goal was to get to NXT and to get to WWE, and you know, we just got to see Mercedes Martinez make her Royal Rumble debut last month, which I'm sure was a cool moment for her, then there's nothing AEW can do about that. But if AEW just sort of fell asleep and didn't sign her when they had the chance to, then that's a miss on their part. So if not Mercedes, then I would have gone with Shida as the first champion. Jamie from Waterloo, Ontario. I was curious, with you being from New York, what made you become a Mets and Jets fan instead of cheering for the Yankees for baseball or the Giants in football? Is there any other sports team that you cheer for? Being from Canada, the sports team I cheer for are the New Jersey Devils, Toronto Blue Jays, and New York Jets. Yes, I share your pain as being a Jets fan. Actually, all three teams are at lows right now. Well, it's very simple. My father was a Mets fan, and he took me to Shea Stadium when I was little. Now, had he taken me to Yankee Stadium, I probably would be a Yankee fan right now. But my two favorites as a kid were Daryl Strawberry and Gary Carter. You know, I used to have one of those old Kenner starting lineup action figures, and I had one for Gary Carter. I still wish I had it. I'm kind of bummed I don't have it anymore. So that's what got me into the Mets. The Jets, I'm not a huge football fan, but I went to school at Hofstra. And at the time, the Jets were still practicing at Hofstra. They have since long moved on from there to a different practice facility. But they used to practice on campus at Hofstra. So when I would be moving out of my dorm for the summer to go back home, they would be moving in. And there would be some overlap. And we would see the players on campus, and you'd get to talk to them sometimes. So I had Jets players living in my dorm room while I was away for the summer. And then I would come back, and I would find Coke all over the floor. No, I'm just kidding. But no, but it was cool though. It was cool. I would get to sit in on practices and stuff like that when they would be on the field practicing. So this is going back to when they had Vinny Testaverde and Curtis Martin and Wayne Chrebet. And then Chrebet opened his own restaurant. I think it was a steakhouse right down the road, right across from the Nassau Coliseum, called Chrebet's for a while. So that's really when I became more of a Jets fan. I'm more of a casual fan now. I mean, I can watch football. I do watch football sometimes. I'm just not as into it as I am with the baseball and the wrestling. And Doug from Santa Barbara, California. Loved your public relations and Mets segments recently. I watched the Houston Astros, quote, apology conference and thought it was terrible. What did you think of what the PR department decided to do and how robotic their players sounded, as well as what would you have done if you were brought in to help? I would have had a couple of shots at Jack Daniels if they brought me in to help before I jumped into that shit show. Having a press conference was not a bad idea. Having that press conference was a bad idea. And sometimes you can't control what the owner says. You know, if the owner wants to call a press conference and he wants to deflect blame or say something that you as the PR expert don't agree with, you can state your case. All you can do is state your case. But at the end of the day, they're going to do whatever they want to do. So I don't want to be too harsh on their PR staff since I can sympathize. Although the reports are that Jim Crane, you know, the owner of the Astros, that he hired a crisis PR firm to handle this situation for them. Their whole job is to avert a crisis or to tamp down on an existing one. All this did was make things worse. They truly became the laughingstock of baseball this week. And I say that as a Mets fan. Talk about laughingstocks. Those were some of the most insincere apologies from those players that I have ever heard. They looked like they were in physical pain having to say the things that they said. But the owner is the one who looked the worst in all of this. He said, none of this impact, all this cheating, none of this impacted the game. He said, we had a good team and we won the World Series and we'll leave it at that. That was a statement. We'll leave it at that. I don't think it affected the outcome. We won. Basically, we won, you lost, we'll leave it at that. Our cheating really didn't help us. So there's nothing to see here. That is not something that ever should have come out of this guy's mouth. It sounds preposterous. Even if he honestly believes it to be true, and I don't think he does. Even if he honestly believed it to be true, you don't say something like that. You don't call a press conference to say something like that. And when you do, you rightfully get mocked the way that he was this week. Especially since he was immediately, like in the follow-up question, he was immediately called out on it by a reporter who said, well, then, what are you apologizing for? And he says, well, I'm apologizing because we broke the rules. And she says, well, then did that not give your team a competitive advantage? And then finally, he had to admit, possibly, yes, maybe. But I thought he said it didn't. Didn't he just say that 60 seconds earlier that it didn't? Then 30 seconds later, he claimed that he never said that it didn't impact the game, except he did say that. It's on video. Maybe he should step down for health reasons if he can't remember something that he said 30 seconds beforehand. At least their shortstop had enough sense later on to admit that it was definitely, in his word, definitely an advantage for them. I guess their crisis team did not clue him in on what to say. But the other thing that the owner did was he threw the GM and the manager, which... Yeah, they were fired right away by the owner after this whole thing broke. And everybody praised him for it. Well, it was a bold move for him to take. It had to happen. So he already shit-canned the two of them. But the fact that he threw the GM and the manager again here under the bus as being the ones responsible for what happened, as though they had no knowledge of, you know, what was going on, right? They had no knowledge of what was going on, and it's their fault, and they should have, and we had to get rid of him. It was their job to know. Just make sure you don't blame him, though. His quote was, I don't think I should be held accountable. That was his exact quote. He claims he didn't know about any of this stuff until the rest of us did. Until November, he had no knowledge of any of this. I don't believe him. I think he's full of shit. Even if he's telling the truth, that's not the point. all you need to say in a situation like that, if you're put on the spot like that, okay, you've already called this press conference, you're being put on the spot, you've got to say something, you've got to answer this question. It's very simple. You say, I take responsibility for the actions of the staff that I hired. You know, at the end of the day, the buck stops with me. And I promise you, something like this will never happen again. Not on my watch. I will make sure of it. This is a black eye for our entire organization. We're better than this. And it's not fair to the players who work their butts off every day, on and off the field, the ones who did nothing wrong, that their effort would be called into question. That's all he had to say. Something like that is all he had to say. And that's still not going to satisfy everyone. Because you're saying, I take responsibility, but yet you fired them. Why don't you step down? You're going to get questions like that. You can't please everybody. But you never, ever say, I accept no responsibility for any of this. I didn't know. It was all their fault. Not my fault. Don't ever do that. You don't ever pass the buck. You're the owner. You hired them. They worked for you. They reported to you. You're at least responsible for knowing the kinds of things that are going on under your nose. But to even give the press that soundbite was inexcusable. Anyway, if you want to send questions into the mailbag, wrestling or otherwise, thesolemonster@gmail.com is the place to do so. I guess next week, probably next Sunday, I'll be doing predictions for the Saudi Arabia show. Since it's that following Thursday, we'll save that for next week. I'm going to be recording a review for the NXT TakeOver show tonight. Again, I'm not able to go live for tonight. Hopefully that's just a one-night thing, so we'll do the recorded review so there won't be any super chats, which sucks for me, but whatever. No super chats, no phone calls. You all can rejoice. But I will do a review for TakeOver and get it up as quickly as I can later tonight, early tomorrow morning on the YouTube channel. So please watch for it there. Follow me on Twitter, @Solemonster. I'll probably be doing some live tweeting tonight during the TakeOver show as well. I really think, I mean, looking at this on paper, I really do think this has the potential to be the best TakeOver they've ever done. I mean, the quality of the matches on paper is such that this could be the best they've ever done. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I think I have high hopes, have high expectations for this show tonight. And I haven't mentioned it in a while, so I want to let people know, if you have not already picked up your copy of The Adventure of Hardy the Horse, you can do so on Amazon.com. Copies of my mom's children's book, which was published last summer, are available. I know a lot of people picked them up around the holidays, and then it kind of got quiet for a little bit, so it's a great gift if you either have a young child or know somebody who does. It makes for a great gift. If they're too young, buy it anyway, because at some point they're going to grow up and they'll be able to read it. And again, you can go to Amazon.com and type in The Adventure of Hardy the Horse or Michelle Solomon. It'll probably be the first thing that comes up. They just restocked a few weeks ago, and so you can buy a copy of the book there. If you do, let me know. If you get the book and you want to take a picture of it, take a picture of someone holding it and send it to me. I can share that with everyone on Twitter. Thank you to everybody who has already done that. It means a lot to me. So that's it. I'll see you tonight. Post-takeover for my recorded review. And back here for episode 640 of The Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solemonster Sounds Off.
Hello.
This is Morrison versus Adam Cole, Morrison versus Finn Balor, Morrison versus Tommaso Ciampa, Morrison versus Keith.
Let me ask you a question. Were you drinking during the pay-per-view tonight?
I would.
Okay, I thought so. See, I thought so. Okay.
The Solemonster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesolemonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow The Solemonster on Twitter, @Solemonster.
Solemonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Solemonster Sounds Off.